Here, let's start the show.
It is Thursday, February 23rd, 2012. Welcome to This Is Only a Test, the official podcast of Tested.com. This is only a test. And what is going on? This is all very strange. Yes, I am Gary Witter, and I'm your host this week.
What?
Very, very odd. This up is down, black is white, cats and dogs living together. Will is ill. He is ill.
Ill will.
There is ill will in the air. And we hope he feels better soon. He's down with some kind of disgusting oozing throat pustules is the diagnosis that I heard.
Eye problems, throat problems. Sounds like
Will was courteous enough to not want to come in and infect us and force us to sit in a poorly ventilated room with him for a couple of hours and probably get whatever disgusting germs he's carrying. So for right now, it's just the two of us. I'm your host, Gary Witter. As I said, with me as always, Norman Chan. Hello, Norman.
Just the two of us?
Just the two of us right now. Is it awkward?
You and I.
Is this weird? What's going on? Usually
there's
a bit of a buffer.
Yeah. Yeah, usually Will talks a lot. I just want to do a quick check on the audio levels. We are broadcasting this live
okay.
right now.
How's the chat?
And it seems like, well, first of all, people commend you on the great intro.
I don't know what all the fuss is about.
Flawless.
Will used to say how difficult that whenever he would flub it, remember, he'd say, oh, it's not easy. You try it sometime. I remember you nailed it first time when you've hosted.
Yeah.
I nailed it first time. What's he talking about?
I don't know. Maybe a little jaded. It is just the two of us right now. I think audio levels are fine. This is going out live, free for everyone.
Wonderful.
And this is strange.
It's a little bit strange.
Have you ever hosted a podcast before?
I mean, are you missing Will right now, or is it just because...
Not right now.
Okay.
Maybe in a little
maybe
bit.
I'm sure we will in time when my hosting abilities go south very quickly.
Yeah, so we do have full show notes. We will talk about news.
We've got a lot of stuff to talk
about. Not just
about
Lego today.
No.
There's plenty of news going on. We're going to have a special guest in just a little bit.
Yes.
We're going to talk about the PlayStation Vita. This is a weird dynamic because usually Will not only hosts, but he also produces.
Right, so now we're kind of splitting the duties. I'm technically hosting, but you're actually kind of running the soundboard and doing all the technical
stuff. Like I said earlier, I'm Robin from the Howard Stern Show. Or no, Baba Booey.
You're Baba Booey.
That's right.
To my Howard.
Pressing the buttons.
Let's see how this goes.
All right.
Who would be Eric the Midget? I guess Will. Let's just say Will. He's not here to defend himself. Why
right.
not? Let's have some fun. So we do have a lot of news to get to this week. Our special guest is going to be Jeff Gerstmann. From our sister site, Giant Bomb. He's going to be coming in to talk about PlayStation Vita because that really is the big tech story of the week.
Yeah, that came out last week, and Jeff is the only one, I think, in the office who spent extended
Didn't he just come out this week? Just came out a day or two ago.
Maybe
I think
this week.
It's super new. A lot of people on my Twitter feed yesterday were talking about buying it just yesterday. But we do have a lot of other stuff to talk about. Before we jump in, there's usually a cursory amount of bullshit that we talk. Is there any bullshit you want to talk about before we jump into like real tech stuff?
Wow.
I don't want to talk about your shirt. I'm not going to do the Will
stuff. I think what we're realizing is all the bullshit comes from Will.
It comes from Will.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm having to force the bullshit that comes so naturally to Will. I'm having to kind of try and generate it consciously.
Squeeze that out. It's not happening.
Squeeze out that bullshit.
No. How's your week?
It's been pretty good. I kind of feel like this is what fake outtakes is for, though.
I know.
You know, fake outtakes started to creep into the show more and more at the beginning.
Also, this eye contact is very unnerving.
Yeah.
It's like a staring contest going on right
What's
now.
What's going on?
I don't know.
It's like, again, when there's a third person, you can kind of bounce back and forth.
There's no one to look at.
Or you can just check your iPad or your MacBook.
I can't look away right now. This is like the Jack Donaghy, like...
Yeah, it is.
Debating lesson.
It is just kind of...
Who's going
to
look away?
It is kind of a weird staring contest. I think we should get Jeff in here immediately to break the tension. There's a lot of sexual tension in the room right now.
Whoa.
By that, I mean you feel sexy and I feel tense.
I'm getting Jeff in right now. I'm already sweating.
Jeff, come in here and save us from before something awful happens.
A little bit of housekeeping.
That we don't want going out live on the internet.
People that bought your shirt over CES.
Oh, right.
Right. I don't know if we announced it last week.
A lot of people have been receiving the shirts and the posters.
Yeah. And people have been tweeting the posters. That's awesome.
It's great. It's been great to see pictures of the posters kind of up on the wall, sometimes even framed. It's really cool.
Yeah. One person actually got a poster that I did not sign. Apparently,
the one that slipped through the cracks. Jeff, you're right over there.
And apparently people watching us sign the posters live caught it and were shouting at us.
Oh, yeah.
But it still went out. It still went out.
Okay.
Because we weren't watching the chat that day. I made amends and I sent that person something special just for him.
Do we want to know what that is?
No.
Okay.
No.
And the t-shirts are getting redone, right?
Yes. So
people will basically be getting two t-shirts. That turned out to be a pretty good deal for people
I got my first t-shirt.
The purple hair one?
Yeah.
Gary with the purple hair. Jeff Gerstmann, everyone.
Hello.
He's here.
Hi.
With a PS Vita.
He actually brought in the stuff, which is great. Not just to talk about it, but maybe a little show and tell.
Yeah, if you figured, if you guys haven't seen too much of it yet, it's worth maybe passing around.
We're just saying that Gary's shirt, people are going to receive a second shirt with the colors
fixed. What a deal.
I think we should have actually corrected this issue by having you get purple hair.
That would have been the much cheaper way to deal with it.
I'm hoping that people are using the first shirt in interesting ways. Maybe making a shirt for
their animals, like a special edition. It would be a curiosity.
A dog shirt, a scarf, a knife.
Some people are perfectly happy with the purple haired version, from what I could tell.
I'm colorblind, so I don't. It's fine for me. I just wear whatever.
Why not?
What's it matter?
All right, so Jeff Gerstmann from Giant Bomb.
Hello.
Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, anytime.
And we're happy to have you. Because I know people would wish. Some of the people in our audience would wish that we didn't talk quite so much about games here at Tested. But as my dad used to say, wish into one hand, shit into the other, see which one fills up first. You don't always get what you wish for.
I've never heard that before.
We are going to talk about games, but we're going to do it with a legitimate, bona fide game expert.
Well, now you're going a little too far.
Wishes were horses is the saying
another one. But
I have a horse.
But my analogy has shit in it.
What if I'm wishing for a handful of shit?
Well, again, there's a very easy way to achieve that.
Fantastic.
Wish.
Mm. Fantastic.
So, Jeff, the Vita is just brand new out this week, right?
Yeah, well, they ended up shipping it in kind of a weird way that made all the launches have a lessened impact. They actually started selling it last week, but if you wanted one a week early, you had to get a bundle that came with a game, a memory card that was way too small.
The bundle fuck.
And this case, which
is
a fine hard shell case.
Yeah,
here.
Listen.
That's a hard case.
That's
not going to
bend, or
that's not going to be part of some music game, right?
Yeah,
that's going to stop it getting dinged or whatever.
Yeah, but it smells like horrible chemicals inside.
Oh, dear.
And I've been huffing the inside of this case now for the past week, and it's been great.
There's a whole bunch of this is the biggest tech story of the week. It's not every day that a new console is released, especially
right.
these days in the age of longer generations.
Yeah,
so this
definitely.
is a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a whole checklist of interesting kind of subtopics. But first of all, Jeff, you've been living with this thing now for a week or so. What are your overall impressions?
I think it has some really interesting potential, but maybe the games aren't there yet. And they made a lot of decisions about kind of how they built the front end that are things that I would have hoped that they would have corrected from the PSP and the PlayStation 3.
What really sticks out to you about the hardware, first of all? Pluses and minuses.
I think the hardware feels really nice in your hand. The sticks, that has dual analog sticks, correcting kind of one of the big problems with the PSP.
Right.
And that's been useful.
The first handheld console to really have that, right?
Yeah. Out of the box. I mean, the 3DS now has the weird bolt-on thing.
Yeah.
Which is, that's obviously going to have to be a precursor to a second generation 3DS that has it. But, I think it feels good in your hand. It's the
big screen was the first thing that jumped out at me. The screen is bigger than I thought it would
be. Not just bigger.
The whole unit is bigger than it looks in shots and stuff. It's definitely a large thing that you might not want to just carry around in your pocket.
It's one of the buzzwords that we talk about a lot on the Tested podcast that's going around just in tech in general is the idea of no compromises. And this really feels like a no compromise handheld.
Yeah.
Threw everything in the kitchen.
Well, Microsoft
they really
says
did. That's
no compromises, but it's really Sony that has the "it only does everything" mantra.
Yeah.
And this does.
And now it only does everything everywhere, which is pretty cool.
Right. It's a decent slogan for it. Yeah. I would say that they haven't really compromised on too many things here, because it is a big screen. It is a really powerful system. They've got front touch. They've got back touch back here, which is an interesting idea
that doesn't
necessarily pan out as well as you would like. And it's got Wi-Fi as well as 3G. Mm-hmm. It's kind of frustrating because they just started advertising it. They were doing a basically no advertising prior to launch. Now that it's out there, you start to see some stuff hitting television.
Right.
And it says 3G gaming. Totally not true. At least in the context of playing games with people over 3G. It's all asynchronous. There's like leaderboard stuff. It will let you look at your PlayStation friends list and let you send messages and do some things over 3G, but you're not going to be playing
true multiplayer.
Yeah, you're not going to be playing Wipeout over 3G.
Right.
You know, which I think anyone with half a brain will realize that, but it's one of those things that in the ad you're just like, come on, just don't, you're just misrepresenting what this thing actually does.
And to be clear, it's 3G on AT&T.
It is locked to AT&T,
GSM,
absolutely. Yeah.
Can you pop in your SIM card from
your phone? If you have an AT&T SIM, you can pop it in.
It's a micro SIM?
It is a full-size SIM.
So you need an adapter.
Yeah.
Okay.
I have a SIM that Sony actually handed out when they sent the system out.
Are you saying my Clout Windows Phone 7 SIM?
Does yours still work? My Clout phone,
I haven't used it in a month.
Mine shut off, so that SIM probably doesn't work. But I took the SIM out of this one and put it into that phone, and it worked there. So
It almost looks to me like, you know those kind of homebrew mods that you see when people like take an old home console and like mod it into a handheld form, but like done professionally. Like, it really feels kind of like an actual full console that you can carry around with.
Yeah, for sure. And I think there are good things and bad things that come with that, kind of depending on what you're looking for out of handheld games. And that's something that we talk about on our podcast all the time when talking about these handheld systems, is that it's an interesting it's philosophically interesting that Sony is able to take Uncharted and Wipeout and these games that have traditionally been console games, and well, Wipeout as PSP games, but been traditional console games, and put them into this format. And that's great for a specific set of people that are kind of always on the go and have a lot of opportunities on buses or subways or situations like that where they have time to sit there and play a game for a good chunk of time.
People who basically want the same experience they have at home on the go.
Yeah.
I.e. people in Japan.
Exactly. Yeah, definitely. You can see kind of the Japanese market through a lot of the design and through a lot of the things that they're doing with this. But, it's As someone who doesn't live that lifestyle, all I see, playing the Vita is like one big compromise, because it's like, okay, I'd really like to play the new Wipeout game because I like Wipeout, but I have to play it here on this small screen, even though I'm sitting in front of a giant TV most of the time. And as a result, the frame rate is not as good as it would be on a PlayStation 3. You're not getting the exact same level of quality you'd get out of a PlayStation 3, which obviously that's crazy to expect that, but that's what they're selling. For me to play the new Wipeout game, for me to play this Uncharted side adventure that they've come up with, I have to play it on this thing, which is fine if that's the sort of gaming you like to do. But, big screen, big speakers, like that's the sort of stuff that I'm interested in.
Right, so. Because it sounds like the way they're selling the games, this is the PlayStation 3 experience in the handheld.
Right.
But
they've just miniaturized it.
Right, miniaturized it, but they're not accounting for how people use the portables and how much time they have.
We've talked about that before, that I personally think that people, I know I do, look for a different kind of gaming experience.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't want Uncharted just shrunk down.
Right.
I want to play different kinds of games.
Like, mobile game developers are smart in that they're developing games for the 5-minute or 15-minute experience.
Yes, right.
Maybe at most half an hour, depending on how long a typical U.S. commute is.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't seem like these games are being developed for that. I mean, the loading times.
They're not.
Themselves.
Yeah, they're really long load times. But they have mitigated some of that, because the UI is and just the Vita in general is really good at snapping awake and getting you right back into a game. If I want to go out and watch watch a video or need to do something on my friends list or something like that, I can actually just home button out of a game and it'll multitask pretty effectively. Mm-hmm. So you can have a bunch of applications open at the same time.
The touch response is very snappy as well. Like,
yeah.
It looks like it's not juddery or it's slowing down or anything.
Yeah, the UI definitely moves how you'd want it to move.
And it's not. I'm know, when I first picked it up, I was looking at all the buttons trying to figure out how to navigate, and I remembered, oh, I can just touch these things right on the screen. That's actually for a handheld gaming console, that's actually pretty new.
It is, and there are some apps that do incorporate some sort of regular control as well as touchscreen. Like they're not consistent with that. Like the Netflix app feels like the touch was just kind of bolted on at the last minute. Right. It's basically like the PlayStation 3 version of the app. Like they even have their own custom keyboard in there. It's just like some weird experience issues that, you know, not going to make or break you one way or the other. It's just kind of weird stuff.
The games are going to get better over time. They're going to
absolutely. There's still some really good stuff. I mean, you know, they're selling like Super Stardust Delta, which is a great dual joystick shooter, and you know, this system's great at playing stuff like that.
How does the system work as a tablet replacement? Like I know recently the Twitter apps and the Facebook apps and Netflix apps.
Not at all. So not at all. It, you know,
for $250, no one should buy this instead
of a tablet replacement. No.
They are clearly trying to market it as a bit of a multifunction device because the Twitter app, the Netflix app. I mean, is it really viable for those other?
They've got
functions?
Twitter. They've got Facebook, Flickr, and Netflix, and they have a Foursquare app coming relatively soonish.
Have you played
I guess.
With any of these?
Yeah, I posted something from Twitter. Like you know, for a Twitter app on a device that you might not want to have a Twitter app on, it's totally fine. It's an effective application. But I think it's one of those things where it probably only makes sense if you're like a kid who doesn't have a phone that also does all this stuff.
Right.
You're on a feature phone and your parents are like, you can buy one thing, $250. You want an iPhone 4 or a Vita. The Vita can play games also.
Yeah.
And not that I would necessarily want this, but if I'm playing a game, can I get like Twitter alerts and Facebook things pushed to me through,
It doesn't push over the top of the game at this point. That seems like something. They do have a notification center that'll tell you like when your friends are logging on and off.
That's cool.
And when the store updates and that sort of stuff.
Now, the
but
UI
it
looks very cool to me, but when I spoke to you about this last week, you said the UI leaves a bit to be desired.
Yeah, it's the front-end UI, you know, they have this, you know, it's similar to an iPhone in that they've got pages of apps and you can kind of scroll through them. You do it, you know, the opposite direction. Then over here are the things you have running. And it's fine, but
interesting, they kind of jettisoned the cross-media bar, which has really been the Sony language for a long time.
Exactly.
It's something new.
I think, you know, they maybe would have had to do too much to the cross-media bar to make it work in a touch format or make it work efficiently. But the problem they have right now is a problem that I think Apple had pretty early on also, in that there's no app grouping. Okay. So everything you install, whether you have the game in here or not, leaves an icon behind. So all these games are just saves. And so if I touch like Rayman Origins here, and hit start, it's just going to say, dude, put in Rayman Origins.
That doesn't seem very intuitive.
Exactly. And there's no like there's very little indication as to what you have in the cartridge slot in a given time. When you put it in or when you wake up from sleep, the wipeout icon will bounce because that's happens to be what's in here. But if you've been at it for a little bit and you go like, oh, I want to play whatever game's in here. What game's in here? Kind of have to crack it open, pop it out and go, oh,
seriously?
Wipe out, pop
wow.
it, put it back
okay.
in. And
so
go from there.
It sounds like they could organize things a little bit better.
Yeah, definitely. And allowing for grouping, you know, just let me drag all my games that, because you can also download the games. So some of these, some of those icons will actually launch games because I have installed them digitally. They're not.
I don't think Sony's ever been really good at user experience.
But that's all. That's what Kaz is all about.
Yeah. Well, let's.
UX, entire department.
I'm hoping that he was
set up just for UX.
Talk to me a little bit about the back touchpad because that's the one feature that is truly new. No one's
right.
done anything
yeah,
like
no,
that
no
before.
One's got anything like that.
I read an interesting article in a newspaper this week about how Sony has been putting up these booths, you know, demo booths in malls and kiosks, and where people can get their hands on it and try to, you know,
well, Nintendo did the same thing.
Excited about this.
With the 3DS.
Anytime you've got a new paradigm, whether it be Wii or 3DS, whatever it is, they're trying to get people used to it. Mm-hmm. And they were interviewing people that were coming out. This journalist was, what do you think of that back pad? And some people loved it, and other people, it sounded like they were having a hard time getting to grips with it.
Right. It's I think different games use it differently, and the problem you'll run into in a lot of the early games that do use it is that there's no on-screen indication of where you're touching on the back. So any sort of precision touch you need to do back here is tricky.
Until you actually do make contact with the pad, right?
In some cases, yeah. But in Little Deviance, which is kind of their – it's a mini-game collection that serves as kind of a tech demo for the unit. They go through, you know, the camera and like AR scenarios and touching the
you
back,
have to
tapping
use
the front.
All the features.
Yeah, but you have to – it's precision touches. It's basically like whack-a-mole from both sides. So sometimes you have to touch up here, sometimes you have to touch back here. And when you're touching back here, it's a tap, not a rub.
Right.
And you have to get that tap right.
And it's not pressure sensitive.
It's not pressure sensitive. It's just on or off. Nail it. Or you miss and you potentially lose. You know,
I know
that's,
it's hard to predict right now, but do you get the impression that it's something that is going to add to the language of gameplay, or is it going to be something developers kind of like trying to figure out how to implement this thing a year from now?
I think that
we have it, but we don't really know what to do.
It's going to end up a lot like the six-axis, the tilt controls in the PlayStation 3 controller, where early on you're going to see developers using it, and of course, like, Uncharted is maybe like one of the worst offenders of just like cramming in as many of the Vita controls as possible, just to, as almost like a tech demo. I think that you'll see people move away from that stuff as time goes on, especially third parties, because in a lot of cases they're going to be making games for all platforms, and they're, even when they do spend time making rear touch stuff, they're not going to spend a lot of time doing it justice. FIFA does a really good job with the rear touch. That's probably my favorite.
How is that used in FIFA?
It's for shooting. When you actually are heading up to the goal to take a shot, you actually can get your finger on it, move it around, and you're aiming your shot. A little icon will appear bottom center of the screen and show you exactly where you're touching, and then when you let off, he'll take the shot. So you can aim at the corner, then it works really well. But it also creates a situation where now you can't hold the system in a natural way, because you can't rest your fingers on the touch screen at any
time.
Squeeze
in from the side.
So you kind of have to hold it like this or like this. They have kind of recessed wells on the edges here where your fingers are going to go. But maybe my hands are too big, but this is ridiculous. And then reach in to the center to touch.
So the other thing that caught my eye, because I saw a TV spot for the Vita, and it was a guy who was playing a game at home on his PS3.
Yeah.
And then he has to leave the house, and he takes his Vita with him, and he just continues playing. How does that – I didn't know that was a thing. How does that work?
None of those games have shipped yet, but that's something that MLB 12, the show, will have, is the concept of like taking a game – you'll buy the game both places, probably.
Right, it's $100.
You'll need to buy both $100 versions, obviously, right?
They are...
I wonder if they'll sell bundles where you can get both versions at
a discount or something like that.
Together,
they've had some interesting stuff where, like, they put out a pool game. They put out Hustle Kings this week, and that's also available for download on the PlayStation 3, and there is some cross-compatibility there. Right. And they did say if you bought it in one place, you would get the other version for free.
Okay.
I haven't actually seen that work yet. And there have been cases where with downloadable content, like add-on content for a console game, should theoretically work here. I haven't actually gotten that working yet either. But Ultimate Marvel vs. Capcom 3 is supposed to be, if you buy the characters and the costumes on PS3, they will carry over to the Vita.
And it'll seamless. The play is seamless.
There's some kind of cloud saving going on, right? So, when I can come back home, put my Vita down, pick up the PlayStation 3, and I'm now picking up from where I left off on the handheld. Right?
Yeah. That's the idea. I don't know how many games will actually take advantage of that stuff. It's one of the things that, even kind of separate from the Vita, Kojima is doing it with the Metal Gear games, and he called it transfaring. You'll transfer your save from one unit to the next.
If this works, I could actually see this being very cool.
Yeah, it could be really cool. Of course,
it's a different way of doing it.
It's a question of how widely it'll be adopted,
right? And then you run into the other problems, like, you know, is a 3-hour battery life going to be enough for...
That's the battery life?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Is that going to be enough for you to be on the go and actually play the game? Or are you going to lose your save because your battery died? And then what happens to your save on the PS3? So, there's some weird lockout stuff that they've talked about with Metal Gear.
The value proposition, $250 for the Wi-Fi only model.
Right.
You don't get memory cards with that.
Right.
You don't get any games with that. The pricing of the memory cards seemed a little unreasonable when they first announced it, and that's changed.
They've dropped them down. It's still $100 for a 32-gig card.
Okay.
And there isn't even like a teeny-weeny card that comes with it, right?
Well, if you buy the 3G version, they will throw an 8-gig card in now. They weren't doing that originally. They kind of changed at the last minute. I don't know if it was, you know, just reaction to how people have taken the news or whatever. But
if you want to get the full functionality of it and start downloading games from the store, you've got to make sure you get that separate card.
Yeah, absolutely. Otherwise, I mean, there are some physical games that even when you put it in and hit go, say you can't because you don't have a memory card.
Really? The card that the game comes on doesn't have its own storage?
Theoretically, it is possible for them to have storage on them, but, you know, faced with the idea of making the games more expensive to produce, a lot of the third parties have so far said no thank you.
So let's talk about the games, because that really obviously is what it's all about. I know, like, the general consensus seems to be the launch lineup is not stellar, but I'm not holding that again. I mean, when is the launch lineup?
I will say, there are a ton of games.
System.
Like, in terms of quantity, they have, it's what is it, like 16, 18, something like that?
Pretty good for handheld, right?
Yeah, you usually absolutely. Fewer on a handheld yeah, usually when a system launches, it's like
day one.
Oh, PSP was actually PSP was maybe like 8 to 10.
But this is still a step up from that.
Absolutely, yeah.
But a lot of the same. You tweeted a picture that I thought was very telling, where someone had taken their PSP
right.
and their Vita. And under the PSP, they had their launch like they had the game launch games, Hot Shots Golf, Lumines, and Wipeout.
Yeah.
And under the Vita, there's Hot Shots Golf, mm-hmm. Lumines, and Wipeout. Is that telling? Is that telling us that the technology gets better, but in terms of the games, we're not really going anyplace?
I think so. I think that yeah, you definitely could look at it that way. I think that you know it's one of the stories that will kind of be batted around here for a while about the Vita is. This notion of just like Sony didn't really change anything about the PSP. They upped the ante across the board. They said, okay, what did the PSP do great? Had an amazing screen. It was powerful enough to potentially run games that were roughly like PlayStation 2 games. And they kind of went from there. And the reason that sank was, I think, you know, piracy is the big problem. PSP piracy was, you know, that thing got blasted wide open and you know. People running – no one was buying games for the PSP.
I mean the story of the PSP has been interesting because, I mean, obviously it wasn't a flop but it wasn't a mega success either.
It was huge in Japan.
Huge
you know,
in Japan.
It's Monster Hunter is why the PSP that's lives on. App. So Monster Hunter is now appearing on the 3DS and part of the reason why that right stick thing happened for the 3DS is to facilitate the right, release of Monster Hunter.
But whatever
– and without Monster Hunter necessarily – being exclusive to a Sony handheld.
That is a huge deal for them.
This could be that could end up being a make or break thing in Japan.
But it seems to me that whatever takeaway, whatever lessons learned from Sony from the experience with the PSP, they seem to be really just kind of doubling down. This is basically a more powerful, more belt
right.
and whistle
like Hollywood
PSP.
Sequel.
They haven't really they call us a game changer, but they haven't really changed their game.
I don't think so. And I think that you know the market kind of you know you can discount a lot of things because of the piracy, but I think the market spoke fairly clearly last time around when they said this isn't necessarily what we wanted out of a handheld system, right. And Sony said, "Are you sure?" And then
yes,
put this
is.
Out. Yeah. So I don't know. I don't know. It's there are some interesting games on it. There's some definitely some good times to be had.
Well, let's talk about the launch games. What's the if I've got the budget to buy this in one game, what am I getting?
I would say get Lumines or maybe Wipeout. Wipeout has some disappointing aspects to it. I think they don't get the sense of speed quite right. But it is still a relatively solid game.
I get that Lumines
game.
Is cool, and that's what I bought with my PS. That's what I got when I got my
yeah.
PSP day.
It's like
one.
A sad joke that, like, to be sitting here saying, like, yeah, get Lumines.
That's
like,
the thing.
That's
the system is so powerful. Yeah. Do I really want to be playing a Tetris type? And is that really the way to show off what I just bought?
No, not really. Uncharted is going to look like a real console game, but they've crammed it full of like you have to do this charcoal etching and now rub the screen
they're
for a while
them,
or you know you found a human skull and it's dirty so you need to use the rear touch to tilt the skull and then use the front of the screen to rub the dirt off, like that's not fun.
That does it feel gimmicky?
It's super gimmicky. Okay. You know, you can tell that at some level some man in a suit came to them and said, look, you guys use everything this system can do.
You've got to show off all the features.
And
even if it feels a bit shoehorned,
even if you're kind of just turning it into a photo hunt game with some shooting along the way. It's tragic in a way.
I mean, I love the Uncharted games, and you knocked me back a bit when you told me that it's actually not developed by Naughty.
Yeah,
can you tell? Does it feel
absolutely? Okay. It feels like you know, like Uncharted is a big cinematic, big screen experience. You know,
right.
It's a blockbuster movie.
Right.
Uncharted Golden Abyss feels like the kind of made for TV version of it. You know,
directed
it's like it's very small screen, kind of directed to DVD. Like it's still Nolan North, it's still Nathan Drake, it's still that sort of stuff. You know, but it just kind of becomes adventure of the week
but
sort of stuff.
This is where I feel like that miniaturization argument is most keenly felt. Like I've said before, I don't want to play Uncharted on a screen that big any more than I would want to watch The Dark Knight Rises on a screen that big.
Right.
And I doubt that's true for everyone. I'm sure a lot of people are going to love Uncharted, but I think that. To me, I don't want to play that kind of game. I want to play that. I want to play Uncharted on a 65-inch screen.
Yeah, and the compromises they have to make because of the power of the system is that the Uncharted doesn't have any of those big cinematic set piece moments that have become the hallmark of the series
right.
through 2 and 3. So it really is just okay. You're going to shoot some guys for a while, and you know, yeah. If you run up to a guy, you can tap him to you know initiate melee combat. You can tap the icon on the screen to reload your gun or do climbing and stuff like that. And some of that works better than others, but. At the end of the day, like the story is relatively flat compared to Uncharted 2 and Uncharted 3, and it's missing all those huge moments. There's no burning building falling over. Yeah. There's no train. There's no you know like those things that are just as important as Nathan Drake himself just aren't here. And that's the sort of stuff that sticks out. And that's the sort of thing where you're like, well, you know, do I really want to pay $50 for a reduced Uncharted experience, especially if, you know, you happen to be in that segment of people who maybe haven't played Uncharted 3 yet? You can find Uncharted 3 for cheaper than that now.
And again, my attitude towards launch lineups has changed over the years, and I'm much less judgmental about the quality of launch lineups, because you look back at the history of consoles, rarely does a console launch with a stellar line of games. Like the Xbox 360, as I recall, the launch lineup on day one was actually pretty grim, but the games did come.
Oh, yeah.
And now it's a fantastic system.
It took half a year, at least.
So my question for you then, Jeff, is what's the prognosis for games going forward? Is there a lot of stuff on the horizon that we should be excited about?
I think that there's some interesting things coming up. Gravity Rush, or Gravity Days in Japan, Gravity Rush here, is coming along in May. That's been something that the people have been looking at and being pretty interested in. Very kind of Japanese character action game with kind of a low gravity thing going on, from what I can tell. Unit 13.
A lot of people have been talking about FIFA as well, right? You mentioned it earlier, but FIFA's a game that people are excited about.
Yeah, I think so. I'm not a sports guy, so it's kind of all lost on
every
me.
Every time I've tweeted something about the launch lineup, people say, you got to play FIFA. So I'm guessing that it's good.
That might just be people thinking like, well, Gary's British, so
here's something you might like. Here's Tea Football. Party Simulator.
Exactly. Here's a Top Trumps game you can download.
The other thing, oh my God, Top Trumps.
They're porting the Young Ones Commodore 64 game to the Vita. You should check that out.
That would actually make me buy a Vita. The other thing I want to talk about that's really interesting is the physical game versus download game paradigm. They tried it with PSP Go. It didn't really work.
Yeah.
They're having another crack at it now. And like the whole concept of like day and date, digital versus physical media, it seems like they're really making a go of it this time.
Yeah, they are. And, you know, I think it'll end up being like the timing will be weird in some cases, because basically they update the PlayStation Store every Tuesday night. And the time is – it's always like weird, like 6 p.m. or 9 p.m. and stuff like that. But so theoretically you could go to a store on Tuesday morning and pick up a lot of that stuff physically if you want.
Right.
But yeah, you can get all those games. For some publishers, it is cheaper. For Sony, for Axis, for the Blaze Blue game they put out, and Ubisoft discounted theirs as well. Basically, you get a 10% break on the price, which is great.
How do the economics work out, though, in terms of if you're downloading all these games, you're still going to have to buy the blank media to accommodate
them all? You'll need that 32-gig card. Uncharted is 3 gigs, and I think that might be the largest game.
Oh, so you can put a lot of games on a 32-gig
definitely.
Card.
Yeah, you know, and you can download that stuff anytime you want. If your card fills up, just delete it and re-download it later if you like. Yeah. The list of your download history is relatively easy to find.
How is the online store right now? Is there a bunch of interesting stuff on
there? It's everything that they are selling on card, as well as a handful of download-only games like Super Stardust Delta, which is a dual joystick shooter that's pretty good. Escape Plan, which we gave a 3 out of 5, like kind of side-scrolling kind of thing that is a bit of a mess in spots. There's a game – oh, geez. I want to get the actual name of it right here. It is Mutant Blobs Attack.
That sounds like an excellent – that sounds like a made-up game like in The Simpsons or something.
Yeah, and it is a side – if I had to boil it down to you in one sentence, it is a side-scrolling Katamari Damacy game.
Oh, that sounds good.
So it's kind of a platforming sort of thing, but you're a blob and you kind of – suck up little things around the world to get big enough to get to the next stage.
Do the games load any faster when you download them, or is it the same as if you buy it out of the box?
I've only really tested it with like Lumines and Michael Jackson Experience.
Mm-hmm. And this to me seems like
they're pretty similar.
Similar.
I really feel like this is the way that gaming as a whole is going, not just on but particularly on handhelds, because we've said that we often want these smaller experiences. That it's not always about the AAA titles that you go to GameStop and buy in a box, but the really cool ecosystem of little cool indie games and fun stuff that you can find online.
If the price is right for those games.
Right.
If they're not $50.
And PlayStation Network seems to have really made some great strides to catch up with Xbox Live Arcade in terms of finding those games.
Yeah, absolutely. They've got a whole system in place and a whole kind of ecosystem over there that built to help independent developers, and they're going out there and they're finding games that aren't showing up anywhere else. They've got a game called Sound Shapes coming along relatively soon from Jonathan Mack, the guy that did Everyday Shooter, that is a pretty awesome rhythmic side scroller.
Like
I think with all of us, that's like I know Patrick's like waiting for that game to come out, and then he's going to go buy a Vita to play it.
I guess
maybe a little ridiculous because it could be a PlayStation 2 game visually,
right?
But
all this power, and we're just still running these quirky little games.
Yeah, exactly.
If you do the math, if you saved $5 a game, right, 10%, it's $100 for a 32-gig card, so you need to buy $20 worth of games. If you can fit $20 games in a card, then the card's worth it.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, if you are in need of that kind of mobile music thing, that the device that can play videos and stuff like that, it will play MP3s. So it will play videos.
Because it's a Sony product, and Sony obviously has their hands in, you know, music right. and movies. Are they pushing that at all?
Like, you know, as part of the store, you can actually rent and buy movies. And that's it's the same stuff that they've had on the PlayStation Network for a while. It hasn't launched on the Vita just yet, but they do have their Music Unlimited service. Mm. I guess it was formerly known as Curiosity.
Right, they rebranded that.
Is there some kind of cross-platform thing where if I buy a movie on my PlayStation, I'm going to be able to get it here as well?
I believe that is the case.
Because that seems like a no-brainer if they don't do that.
I believe that is the case. I haven't tried that case specifically. But I took that Louis C.K. video that I bought from him and put that on here, and it looks great.
MP4 plays MP4 is just
absolutely
fine.
Does not play MKVs, nothing does.
No, what would
My boxy box does?
Yeah.
So do you think it has a future as a we touched on earlier, but it's as a multifunction device? I mean, especially with the 3G version, I can imagine putting Skype and using this as a VoIP phone. But I mean, is that just another side talk in waiting to happen? I don't know.
A little bit. I think it's it really is a matter. It really depends on how invested you are in what Sony does everywhere else. If you're already a Music Unlimited subscriber, if you're already getting videos from the PlayStation Network, it's just like, you know, the Apple ecosystem. But if you're attached to the Sony ecosystem, then this is going to do everything you want it to do.
This is a good extension of that.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think that, you know, if you're coming from iOS, if you're coming from an Android phone, if you're coming from those sorts of experiences and kind of looking at this thing, it doesn't add up in the same way.
Do you feel like even at that launch price of $250, Sony is struggling to try to make this seem like it's good value?
A little bit.
I mean, in terms of the hardware, I think they packed in a lot for $250.
They have.
It's pretty impressive.
The games are pricey, and the games are variable price. You know, there are some that are coming out at $30. But $50 for a handheld game, you know, you get into that territory where you have to, like as a reviewer, have to start comparing them to real console games because all the money is the same.
Yes.
And that's where it starts to not add up unless you are very specifically interested in a handheld.
Like a lot for a handheld game, no matter how good.
Do you really want to pay $50 for a subpar Uncharted experience? Like, absolutely not.
I would love it though, especially with these cross-platform games, if they did have some kind of offer where I could get the bundle and save maybe 50% off the price of one of these. Because
I expect they
want to have that.
They'll probably do something like that. I think it'll be one of those things where they probably still need to figure out how the business end of that stuff works. But they've talked about it.
$100 for the same game.
Yeah, that's no one's going to do that.
All right, so Jeff, I'm going to put you on the spot. I know this is tough, but the big picture, what are we going to be saying about this thing in a year or two from now? Is there a place for this thing?
I think that this thing is on the wrong side of history right now. And I think that with all the movement, you know, that's been made on the smartphone side of things, and you know, that's kind of where the excitement is, and that's where you're getting those bite-sized, quirky indie game experiences that you would want from something like this. I don't know that there's necessarily a place for it because I think you can take the money that you would spend on this and a memory card and some games and go pretty far down the hole on a brand new smartphone.
My feelings on this are, well, I don't want to harp on it too much, which is why I'm more interested in your opinion. But I've said, I mean, this system is not launching into the same world that the PSP did. The iPhone, Android phone, smartphones have really changed. They have been the true game changer. And I can play a ton of really cool games for free or 99 cents or $2.99 on my phone that I already carry around. Having that argument's been steady. Having said that, this is maybe feeding a need for the hardcore that you don't get from the multifunction, the cell phone devices. I mean, is that where it's going to find its
place? I'm not sure how many of those people really do exist. And I think the larger thing that's happening now is it's not just about, like, are the games on the Vita better than the games on the iPhone? Of course they are. You've got dedicated controls, and you're spending 10 times as much for them, if not more.
Right.
The real thing is that, you know, there are so many other things competing for everyone's time. On my phone, I've got a Twitter app there. I've got all this stuff, you know, a world of apps, a world of social networks to get lost in, a world of keeping in touch with my friends and reading news stories and all this stuff, and it's also a damn phone. You know, the web browser on this is poor. You know, the apps are a decent start, but it's never going to be like iOS. Like, Sony's never going to create that sort of
It's going the other way around.
System.
It's going from stuff that
like Sony made the Twitter app for this. Right. You know, Sony made the Flickr app. It's not like there are independent developers like clamoring to be a part of this.
There's not
going to
be like a big third-party app store for this thing beyond games?
I doubt it very seriously. I think Sony will create a handful of kind of basic functionality, and if someone comes to them and says, hey, we really want to do this thing, then maybe they'll start to have discussions, but they're not out there going like, we're launching another big third-party app store.
Right, right. Isn't that what they need to do, though? I mean, Apple has shown the success of making it easy for people to develop cheap and fun games and getting a big ecosystem.
I think
there.
Focus on the games, not on the apps.
I think
no, but that's what I'm talking about, even for game developers.
I think that sort of store and that sort of freedom on pricing and stuff like that undercuts the big games they're trying to sell so heavily that it would probably.
I mean,
that to me has been,
you know, when you mentioned $50 for a game, the comparison, you're saying you got to compare it to the games you play on your home console. I think the real comparison is the other ways we can play handheld games. You know, I've said this before. We now live in a world where even on my iPhone, I look at a game for $4.99 and think, oh, that's a bit expensive. Because we've been so conditioned by the free app culture, our perceptions of value have totally changed. Yeah. $30 for a handheld game, especially when a lot of these games do eventually get ported to the phones for much cheaper. Like you can get Scribblenauts now on iOS for like $5.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Ghost Trick is like $10.
I think Capcom's doing a good job with their, you know, it's free to download, try it out. It's the shareware model.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then you
it's
unlock
awesome.
The full game for $7. And id's been pushing that with their, you know, $15 games, just saying that their games have more value.
It's tough. So your ultimate prediction is, I like your quote that you think it's on the wrong side of history.
Yeah, for this market here, I think, you know, in Japan you'll see a different story, but I think that Monster Hunter on the 3DS makes that a much tighter race than maybe it would have been otherwise.
And I don't really understand the global economics of it, but is it good enough for Sony to call this a win if it's a massive success in Japan but nowhere else?
That probably not. You know, but I think they would absolutely spin it that way if it does well for them in Japan. But, you know, there was a while there, you know, it had a good first week, and then the sales numbers over in Japan have been slipping ever since, to the point where the PSP was outselling it.
What would we need to hear like a year from now in terms of a U.S. installed base for Sony to be able to say that they made a hit out of this?
Oh, gosh, I don't know about that. For me, it's really about, you know, the quality of the developers they're getting and the quality of the games that are being announced. They rolled out a pretty heavy list of developers when they first started talking about Vita. You know, there is a Call of Duty game coming for the Vita.
Right.
And, you know, if that'll end up being like, you know, what, Black Ops 2 or something like that, if that ends up being a port of the game that they're putting on consoles, it's kind of like, who cares? But if it's a B team making a second Call of Duty game, you know, it's maybe a no-win situation for that fan base. Like,
who do you think Sony considers their competition right now? Nintendo or iOS, Android, or all of it?
I think in Japan, it's definitely Nintendo. You know, that's I think that Nintendo and Sony are still kind of locked in this older mentality of, we're the games business. The phone business is something completely different that isn't even encroaching on us. That stuff doesn't matter, because here in Japan, that's totally true. But when you start taking the worldview a little bit more, I think that some of the stuff doesn't necessarily add up as intelligently as maybe it does for that market.
And we haven't really talked about Nintendo, but we should, because they're the only other true competitor in the dedicated handheld gaming space. If I were to come to you and say, look, I've got $250 to spend. I like all kinds of games. I know I don't like touch controls. I don't want an iPod Touch or any of that nonsense. I want a real handheld. What do I get, a 3DS or a Vita? What would you say?
I think I would say 3DS, because it offers a little more versatility in terms of just like what sorts of games you're going to get on there. They have done, you know, they put out a Resident Evil game that is very much like a console Resident Evil game for better and for worse.
And the DS backwards compatibility is compelling.
You get all those games as well. You can get PSP games on the Vita. You can digitally download.
But again, even then, the DS
PS1,
library.
Yeah, exactly. The DS library.
PSP Go games, right?
Yeah, digital games. Not even a full list of those, because it's a compatibility thing. But there are a lot of wonderful games between the DS and 3DS that are to choose from, and I think that's going to be a more versatile experience. You're going to get some of those touchscreen games. You're going to get some of the other types of games, and you know, it has Super Mario 3D Land, which is a hell of a game. And they've got some things in the works that seem interesting. Where it was with this, some of the things they have in the works definitely seem interesting. But so far, from my perspective, it's been a lot of things that's like, man, I sure wish I could play this game without the compromise of not having four shoulder buttons and having to hunch over this screen and notice that the textures look kind of funky and the frame rate's not where it probably would be if it was on a console and that sort of stuff. You know,
so the world has changed. You've said you think it's on the wrong side of history. Is that trend only going to? I've said before, and I don't know if this is too much of a crazy prediction, but I think there's a good chance this could be the last generation of dedicated gaming handhelds that we see.
Yeah, I think Sony
are only going to become more compelling, more powerful, more of a genuine competitor. The dedicated handhelds are going to get more and more squeezed.
But it's not like Sony
go after this.
Has all their eggs in the Vita basket. I mean, they're still pushing PlayStation certified and all their Xperia phones. you know, can play PlayStation 1 games, and there's going to be a store attached to that. And then I think HTC is jumping in on that soon.
Yeah.
So even if the dedicated handheld thing doesn't work for them, they are still having, you know, developing Android phones.
But do people want to play 15-year-old? I mean, just the process, just the stigma of just like, hey, we're able to put out all these super old games.
The PS1 stuff, but then there's a lot of PSP Go stuff. There's no reason that couldn't be ported over.
That's true.
For PlayStation certified.
Yeah.
I mean, I see a lot of excitement on Twitter and Facebook, people, you know, that are in the same sphere as me going out and buying the Vita day one. And so there are people that are excited. I just don't know that is a very specific subset of gamers. I don't know if it's going to be enough to really make this a mainstream.
I think
success.
That there's enough going for it right now that if you know, you do have that curiosity about it, I think you could pick one up and not necessarily be super disappointed with one or anything like that. I think there are reasons to pick one up on day one. If you are so serious about your gaming that you absolutely need to own everything and need to know for yourself firsthand what's going on with every single platform, you know, there are definitely reasons to pick up a Vita.
A specific set of early adopters.
Yeah.
There's got to be more than that in the long run.
Yeah. I think that's where maybe it doesn't – where it runs into a lot of the same problems that the PSP would. And, you know – hopefully they won't have a piracy issue on this, because that was the early nail in the coffin for the PSP. Was it's like already kind of heading off in this direction that wasn't necessarily great. And then, oh wait, all the games are free. So all the developers said, screw this, we're just not going to put our best efforts on the PSP anymore because we don't sell anything there.
Have they made moves with this to try and head that off? I mean, obviously there's another proprietary memory format with
right.
these cards.
Yeah, the cards are a proprietary format. These the game cards are a proprietary format. That doesn't stop people for long. It doesn't take long to reverse engineer. I mean, you know, people were pirating DS games
It'll
relatively early
next
on.
Thursday that instead of next Wednesday, basically.
Yeah, it's maybe it's inevitable, at least on that front of dumping the games and that
Which
sort of stuff.
Shame.
Whether they can get them running.
The reason the system doesn't succeed. If it didn't succeed because Sony didn't put enough good games out or they screwed up the hardware, fair enough. But I would hate for piracy to be the reason.
It's a chicken and egg argument on the PSP. You know, you could argue that developers were already kind of moving away from the platform, and then piracy became a really convenient excuse.
Right.
But it was a case where, you know, it like. Knowing kind of some people that were putting games up on the digital storefront for the PSP and saying like, oh yeah, we hit number 6 on the top 10 and we sold like 80 copies. And we were still like the number 6 game for that week. Like just knowing that like the sales numbers were that low for that stuff. It's
one thing that we do know about Sony though, and we saw it with the PS3. I mean, going all the way back to things like Minidisc and Betamax, that Sony will throw money into something, no matter, even if it's not going great for the first couple of years, they will keep doubling down. The PSP obviously went through several generations. Do you think with the Vita, like a year from now, is there going to be like a slimmer one with better battery life and some enhancement? Are we going to see that same kind of progression?
Probably, but I think that, you know, the Sony that we're seeing these days is looking to eventually become a very different company. They're going to have to be. You know, they're losing so much money on TVs and all this other stuff. You know, they can't necessarily afford another full-on console war. I think if Microsoft jumped the gun right now and said, hey, we're putting out our Xbox next year, Sony would be like, PlayStation 3, 10-year cycle. We're still going. Like, they just would not be in a position to respond.
Right.
And I think, you know, they're very focused on the Vita and focused on kind of figuring out what the future is going to look like for them.
Well, there has been a big change in Sony leadership, right? Howard Stringer is out. Kaz is in. Does that? And often when that happens, you do see a big – the new CEO wants to demonstrate that they've got a direction of their own, that they're not their father's son or whatever. I don't know if that's going to mean much for the Vita though, because the hand of Kaz is very much in this product, right?
Yeah, I mean, he came out of the PlayStation. You could argue that Ken Kutaragi, who hasn't been there for years, is, you know, you can kind of see his fingerprints on some of the Vita stuff. So I think it'll be the things they do from here. Like, what does the PlayStation 4 end up being? And maybe more importantly, like, what does the rest of Sony do? You know, if they are these divisions that are losing money and that sort of stuff, can they kind of swallow their pride and say like, hey, we don't need to be in the TV business as heavily as we are because we're just taking a bath on it.
I mean, CES, they did not push a bunch of TVs out.
Yeah.
Yeah, they pushed their phones, the Walkman, Android Walkman, and PlayStation.
Yeah, so I think, you know, the Sony's going to go through a big transition, you know, at a corporate level across all their divisions. And, you know, probably a lot of it will be done to make a lot of it look more like the PlayStation stuff because that's been working for them so far.
And cost cutting, a lot of cost cutting.
Yeah.
The box for the Vita, I thought looked real cheap.
The box is real unsexy. It's
real cheap.
Yeah, it is. But the game boxes are awesome. Like, look at these teensy Blu-ray boxes.
They're adorable.
Though it's kind of disappointing when you crack them open, there's no manual. All the manuals are digital, but they still have a little clip here as if to say, like, yeah, you know, if you got some, you know, write down some passwords and put it in here or something.
And even this little box almost seems like a ridiculous way to waste plastic. It's like you're just a teeny tiny card that's inside it. I mean, that's the size of an SD card.
Yeah. This is like the CD long box of its of its day or something. They just need to take up enough space on a shelf so you can see it exists.
Because otherwise these little things,
you're never going to buy a
game. But most people are just going to probably put those in one of those little wallet things, don't you think?
So yeah. Even this case that came with my thing here can hold four of them here.
Yeah.
But, you know, I would say, I mean, anyone listening to this podcast is you know, in deep enough that they understand the value of digital downloads.
Yes.
So I would say go that route. Like, you're going to in the long run, if you end up with a Vita, just go whole hog, buy the 32 gig card up front because, you know, you're going to eventually fill it up.
That's the biggest one?
Yeah, it's the biggest one.
And it's the only one. Right?
There's 4, 8, 16, and 32.
Oh, okay. There's some options. Yeah.
I may
as well get the big one now.
My bundle came with a 4, so now I just have this 4 gig card that's totally useless and can't fit into anything else other than
a Vita. Put some movies on that. Spider-Man 2.
No. I learned my lesson when I paid $200 or $250 for a 2 gig memory stick for the original PSP and said, like, I'm going to put a bunch of videos on this that I'll never watch.
Right,
oh, God, what am I doing?
I use the firmware patch and like, oh, I can compress a movie in a certain way, 700 megs, put two movies on that memory stick.
Yeah.
And watch them on a PSP.
I remember being so excited. That was pretty new when the PSP first came out.
Oh, yeah,
came out.
I mean, it's
concept. Definitely.
And included the UMD, you get Spider-Man 2. Free movie.
Right. I got Spider-Man 2.
It's like, wow.
Which I never
great.
Watched because, again, I don't want to watch a movie like that on that little screen.
Yeah, that's not a good way to watch a movie.
All right, so sure. I think we all hope it's going to be. The gaming is only more interesting when we see more devices that are successful. And, you know, I'm rooting for it, although I do kind of agree with you that I think it feels a little bit like the Duke Nukem Forever of consoles. Like, we waited a long time for it, but in that time, the world has maybe moved on a little bit.
Yeah.
All right, Jeff, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, anytime, you guys.
I've learned a lot about the
Vita. This is such a more lively podcast. I don't know what's different. What's different in here. It's just like a different energy.
It's more fun. It's like having a good time.
I don't have shit on my hands.
Yeah.
It's great.
I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is, but whatever this changes, I feel like we should stick with it.
And eye contact.
That's right. Oh, by the way, before you came in, there was a Norman and I had nowhere else to look, so it was actually
just that dead stare.
It was getting pretty steamy there for a while. You came in and broke
the
tension.
So I sit there, and Ryan sits there, and then we have people on the sides, but there are a lot of moments where I'm just like dead staring at Ryan while we're doing it, just to see if I can rattle him. So
I know why those podcasts go so long.
Yeah.
Because there's no way to break that tension.
Exactly.
That energy.
It's just like that. You get locked in, just vapor locked, just staring like, okay, we're going to sit here for 3 hours and just do this.
Is there anything final you want to add? Any final thoughts to the Vita?
I think it's pretty cool, but I think that you see Sony's kind of missteps with some of the PlayStation 3 interface, like all over it in some weird ways.
Right.
And
but they can fix that.
There are definitely some stuff that they can fix. I think that give it 7 or 8 firmware updates, and they'll really have something.
So don't buy it today.
Unless you're an early adopter, if you can justify that, if the money's worth it to you, just like get it out there and have it. Like, there's enough going on for you to kind of fill your time. But yeah, for everyone else, I might say like, hey, wait off a little bit, kind of see how this develops.
Even if you have an extra $350, Lego kits you can buy.
Maybe.
That's right. I just think right now everything I pass everything in terms of how much Lego could I buy for that much money?
Right.
$250, I could get.
I know it's like a Star Wars Imperial Shuttle or the PS Vita. Both are going to go on my shelf,
like,
except one will go on the shelf and one will go in the drawer.
Mm-hmm. Right. Exactly. A thing of beauty is a joy forever. Jeff, thank you
so much.
All right,
if you guys are going to be talking about Legos, I should probably get out of here. I don't want to get sucked into that world. It's just too
expensive. Jeff has remained completely immune to the Lego lust that has taken over the Whiskey Media office, and I commend him for that.
Go play with your pod racer.
All right.
Thank you, Jeff. So apologies to anyone who found the in-depth Vita conversation not to their taste. But again, fuck you. It's a big story, and that's what we talked about this week.
And after this quick break, we're going to go talk about some real tech news.
I think you're stepping on my toes a little bit there.
Oh, okay. Well, we need to develop the system.
I was going to ask you if you feel like it's appropriate to take a break. But, you know, wait for me.
Okay.
Don't jump the gun. Norm, should we take a break?
Yeah.
And talk about the rest of the news after the break?
Absolutely.
I like that.
We'll be right back.
there's a lot of other stuff in the news.
Well, first of all, you know the best part of this podcast is, aside from
I,
just
I already,
being
I already
me,
know what it is.
What do you think it is, Gary?
I'll let you put your theory forward first.
It's the barrage of IMs I'm getting from Will.
Are
right
you really?
Now. The backseat driving.
Is he like Albert Brooks in broadcast news, like constantly trying to phone in with information?
You got to talk about this. You guys got to talk about this.
Now, I did
Please
say
talk
before
about this.
The podcast, I didn't want to know what Will was. I didn't want him Monday morning quarterbacking this podcast.
No, if you want to do that, he should have been here.
Has he been IMing you a lot? Mm-hmm. I don't want to hear any of it.
None of it.
I'll hear about it afterwards. But he's only going to make me second guess myself if I've got him in my ear telling me what to do. I mean, is there anything in there that's at all interesting?
Come on, no, you know
of course,
Will, right?
Of course not. I hope Will's enjoying this. This must be a kind of a surreal experience for him. From
he
the
must
outside
be tearing his hair
I bet
out.
He's bouncing off the fucking walls.
Yeah, he can't talk. Yep.
He's like, this Vita conversation's going on too long, or whatever he's complaining about. You missed that break.
He gets to be one of the people.
I think we've held it. This is pretty solid.
I thought it was an awesome video.
I learned so much. And all credit to Jeff, because we did the right thing. We brought in a true expert. If it had just been you and me, it would have been a bunch of shit. Like, oh, I don't know anything about this.
Screen looks real pretty.
You bring in an expert. So let's talk about some other things in the news this week.
Yeah.
I've got a little list here in no particular order. This has really been stirring up some controversy. We talked about social media privacy and internet privacy last week. And I said there's a different story every week. And next week, here we are again. So Google is changing the way that it monitors your web history.
Yes.
And uses the information that it collects.
And everyone who uses Google, I mean, we all use Google.
Of course we do. Often without even realizing it.
Should be getting to notice this now. So whenever you Google search, whether it's on your phone or on your desktop, there is a little pop-up that says, hey, we are changing our policies. You know,
right.
Click here to read more.
Right.
And people just click through that stuff.
Exactly.
No one's going to read it.
So the Electronic Frontier Foundation and various other groups who try to keep an eye on user privacy and make stopping these companies being too evil released some news this week saying you need to be aware that Google is changing the way that it monitors your web history.
Right.
And if you want them to stop collecting your data, this is your last chance. Your last day was yesterday, in fact, to opt out. And to clear all your web history.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I don't particularly care, but a lot of people really do.
Well, it is kind of scary. So Google's spinning it. They're saying they're unifying all their privacy policies across all the different services they have.
Right.
But what in effect that means is every time you do a Google search, that search history populates and feeds into what type of ads you get when you use YouTube.
Can't you argue that's a good thing, though? I'd rather be looking at ads that are relevant to me than ones that are irrelevant.
But before, the way they were doing it, like, for example, in Gmail, the ads you see in Gmail were based on, because you are using their service, and they're anonymously collecting the data in your mail.
Now, that is creepy, because it's making me aware of the fact that they're looking at my mail.
But there are
algorithms and things that are extrapolating
stuff.
So
if you write a lot of email about, laptops or something, you will see ads about laptops. But now it's tied into search, and because Google search is so ingrained in what we do on computers every day, the things that people search for aren't necessarily the things that you can argue it's the things they care about, from a correlation standpoint, but not necessarily the things they want to see ads for.
Isn't this what they've always done, though? I mean, this is why Google is the number one ad seller in the world.
Well, this will help them. This will theoretically, bolster that position.
But you can opt out. And again, the point of the notices this week was for people that may otherwise not think to do it. A lot of people, again, like the EFF and other organizations, have been saying this does matter, and you should do this.
Mm-hmm.
So I logged into my Google yesterday, looked at my web history settings, and I web history turned off anyway.
Because
I think this probably happened the last time there was a scare story. I opted out.
Yeah.
So I don't know if people can even still do this, but you can at least be aware. Again, I think it's obvious, and I think you're very naive to think that this data isn't being used, because this is how Google and Facebook and these companies make money. And again, it is kind of creepy. Like, I was on Facebook the other day and Leah was sitting next to me. She said, have you noticed how you're starting to get ads for baby stuff?
Oh, yeah.
Because they know I'm in a relationship with her.
Oh, my goodness.
And they know that she is posting about baby stuff. And so I'm now getting baby things. And it does creep you out when you realize
how
that
do they
sometimes.
Know?
Yeah. How do they know?
Yeah.
You look like you could use a Guinness, John Anderson. It's a bit scary.
You know, so, for the Google search thing, though, because even though you can opt out of search on iOS, that search history thing, the search history bar, like in Safari, when you tap the search bar and you look at your 10 most recent searches, that always surprises me. Like, what? Why did I search
for
this?
Yeah, it's like, why was I looking for that?
Oh, my God. And there's no easy way to clear that. And you have to go to the settings and wipe that out completely.
Right.
Private browsing mode. That's the way to get around all that.
Let's move on. I'm always pleased when misfortune befalls AT&T.
Well, because you're no longer chained to them.
Well, and also because, as many people know, I don't like them. I don't think they're a very good company. And I think every time they get their wrists slapped or some way suffer, that puts a smile on my face.
Or pockets emptied.
So let's talk about this. So AT&T had to pay a $3 billion fine.
Yeah, because the T-Mobile deal broke down, and they knew going into that T-Mobile deal that, you know, that was part.
So it wasn't a fine; it was a penalty that was in the contract.
Yes, it was.
They made a deal with T-Mobile to buy them, and basically said, if for whatever reason this deal doesn't go through, we will pay you a $3 billion compensation. And also, there was additional about $1 billion in terms of bandwidth, right? The
spectrum.
Spectrum, yeah. Right? Exactly. So AT&T try to make a big play to buy T-Mobile. A lot of people were up in arms about monopolistic practices, quite rightly so, because it would have restricted cell phone consumers to even fewer choices. And it didn't go through. I think AT&T should have seen this coming. The government stepped in and crushed it utterly, as they should have done, because it was very anti-competitive. And so not only does AT&T lose all this money, but the CEO took a pretty big smack in the face as well. $2 million penalty from his personal compensation.
Yeah, his bonuses or whatever.
Now, while I think this is good, you got to wonder if this is even good. I mean, the guy's probably earning something like 10 times that.
I'm sure for him personally, it's more the...
it's an embarrassment.
It's a slap on the wrist.
But honestly, if you make a deal that I feel a lot of people should have been able to see coming, like this is not... There's no way this is going through regulation... And that then happens and ends up costing your company $4 billion. If I work for a company and I made a boneheaded move that cost them $4 billion, they're not docking my salary by 10%. They're fucking firing.
You're gone.
Yeah. Why does this guy even still have a job, Norm?
Yeah, I think it's because it was built in. It wasn't a surprise that it was $4 billion. And I think going into
he built it in.
But the board
he signed off on that penalty.
But the board also approved it, and you know the entire company.
Well, they can't all fall on their swords, right?
Exactly. So. I don't think the AT&T could oust their CEO right now and still be in a good place, because they need leadership, and they're not in a position where they can fall behind even further, because they're pushing 4G LTE stuff now. You know, they're no longer the only iPhone provider.
Correct.
So it's
that was their big stranglehold for a long time, and now they have to be competitive in other ways. Let's move on. So we always knew. You know, obviously Netflix has been kicking ass and taking names for a long time.
Yeah.
But they were never going to have that business model all to themselves.
No. Just because they were first to it doesn't mean they're the best.
Blockbuster tried to compete, didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, there was a fantastic tweet this week where the official Blockbuster Twitter feed said to its, you know, user, whoever is following official Blockbuster, asked its users the question, hey, what are your favorite sequels? And somebody wrote back, Blockbuster 2, Netflix.
Oh, no.
Yeah, that was pretty funny. But so here comes Comcast, which obviously is much bigger, much more powerful than Comcast. We've been hearing these stories that Verizon might be getting involved, that there are different companies that were going to try and get into that Netflix business model and compete with Netflix.
Because they're not only a content provider, they're a content owner.
That's right. Unlike Netflix, who has to go out and source and buy and make deals for these content, Comcast, of course, now owns NBC Universal, which is a vast tranche of content. So they're gonna be launching this new service called StreamPix. What do we know about this? Other than the name
is terrible. Yeah. StreamPix with an X. It's Xfinity StreamPix. You add an X on either side of that name.
God,
and
so many X's.
Yeah.
All right. So what do we know?
So it's a service launching actually today, Thursday.
This is not like some offer. This is actually happening now.
Launching today. It's a slow rollout. So right now it's gonna be available to people who already subscribe. Actually, it's only available to people who are current subscribers to Comcast.
Oh, so this isn't like HBO Go. This isn't a cable cutting thing.
No. Well, HBO Go also, you need to have HBO, which means you need to have cable.
Well, that's what I'm saying. This isn't like Netflix where you can cut the cable TV.
This is like HBO Go.
It still relies on you having a cable subscription.
It feels more like a value add right now.
Okay.
Now, they weren't very specific as to which of their customers actually get the service for free.
Uh-huh.
I think if you subscribe to Comcast, you get like only the basic cable, not
but you got to have like the silver or gold package or something to get
this. If you're in the bronze package, you got to pay $5 a month to get access to StreamPix.
Well, I have like digital.
I think you and I are safe. If we have,
so we can go check this thing out right now.
Yes, and the ways we can check it out are kind of interesting right now. It's going to be basically an expansion of on demand. So that terrible menu for on demand, which right now, if you have a Comcast cable box,
it's pretty clunky.
The Motorola cable box.
There's a lot of good content on demand, but it's a hassle to find it.
Yeah, so they're expanding that library. So as opposed to being able to watch only like the last five episodes of 30 Rock, you know, and those expire, especially the HD versions, they expire like in a month.
Yeah, you got to stay on the ball with
you have back library. You have backlog of
library.
That's
terrific. And they do so it's like having Hulu Plus where you get everything.
Yes.
Right.
And of course, I think with their ads, the current ads that you get with their kind of woven into the on-demand stuff. They did announce content partnerships. They do have ABC, Disney, which Netflix will not have at the end of this month because they're losing Starz Play.
Right.
And the other place you can play this is on website and mobile.
Well, I can already do that, though, with the on-demand content as a Comcast subscriber. Mm-hmm. I can already get that on my app,
on my iPad.
Or, yeah. So how is this? Is there a separate
this
set of
StreamPix
content?
Yes. So it's just the expanded library.
Right.
It's basically rebranding on-demand and making on-demand, but with a huge backlog to compete with Amazon Streaming Prime.
Okay.
And also, of course, Netflix.
But it's not truly competing with those because, again, you've got to have a cable subscription.
You've got to be
a cable cut.
Already an Xfinity subscriber.
All right. So if I was Reed Hastings, I wouldn't be sweating it too much.
Not yet. Not yet.
But I wouldn't be sweating it
too
much.
I think they're testing the waters. It definitely feels like a way to keep people paying. And you know,
like you said, it's a value add.
It is a value add. It's like, so I'm happy with Comcast right now. Now I'm, I guess, a little happier, and I'm not have less incentive to cut Comcast completely and go with just Netflix and Amazon Prime. There's no Xbox or Android app yet, but they're going to launch those later this year.
Okay.
I think that's going to be way more important because having those on, you know, having apps on the devices you already own. With a good interface is going to be important because they want to get people used to running that Xfinity app,
right?
Whether it's on the iPad or on an Xbox.
Okay. All right. Good to know. So next in the news, I don't know this story. I'm just reading it off the show notes. 50% of all quote unquote smart TVs sold aren't even connected to the internet. I'm actually amazed that number isn't much higher.
Yeah. So Boise News Report, and I did this because it was kind of tied to this Comcast story with the smart apps, right? Because we could totally see, you know, Samsung releasing a TV next year now with the Xfinity app built in. And I think there was a report earlier, like out of CES, about, you know, how many connected TVs there are and you know, the potential user base for these connected TVs. But it turns out half of these TVs aren't even connected to the internet. And I think both everyone, I mean, Will, you and I, we have smart TVs with apps.
But we already get the content into the TV through other boxes. So.
I don't know if I've launched the smart TV section.
I did just to look at it, and I was like, wow, that's a really clunky interface.
And
the TV doesn't have Wi-Fi. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to plug an Ethernet cable into it. Like, I mean, are the smart TVs now that are coming out at least Wi-Fi, with Wi-Fi in their guts? Because that's
Ethernet. I know.
Some of those do have Wi-Fi. Because most people, even if they have internet in their house, it's probably in a den or a bedroom or something. The Ethernet cable is probably not going to run into your living room.
Yeah. There is Wi-Fi in some of them, and you can buy adapters for Wi-Fi.
If they want Wi-Fi, if they want smart TV adoption to get anywhere, these TVs have got to start shipping with Wi-Fi N. Just right in there, and no hassling. It just connects to wherever your router is.
The TVs are going to cost more.
Wi-Fi doesn't cost shit. Wi-Fi doesn't cost anything.
A $2 cost for Samsung will translate to a $100 cost for the user. I mean, that's just how manufacturing works.
I would eat the cost because getting people plugged into those smart TV applications is you eat the cost up front and you get people bought into your ecosystem.
That sounds like CEO Gary would do very well, but the current...
Why can't these people see the... blindingly obvious.
Well, like when we talked to Panasonic at CES and we saw demos and they're really doubling down on the smart apps, on the Viera stuff. And the interface still is slow and terrible because the chips inside TVs that are dedicated to those smart apps are slow.
This is why there's no uptake because it's crap.
Yeah. Which is why, I mean, you have like the Roku on the USB, or on the HDMI stick, the Samsung demo they ran. So maybe in the future, and maybe possibly with, you know, how Apple does next gen Apple TV, it could be just a USB, upgradable HDMI stick, that you can upgrade software on and then plug into HDMI on your TV and run apps off that.
All right. So for me, the takeaway is obvious. If you want people to use your smart TVs, you've got to make it easy. You got to do two things. You got to make it easy and good. You got to put the Wi-Fi in there so people can connect it up without having to run Ethernet cable or, you know, put an adapter in there. That's a pain in the ass.
Yep.
And it's got to be not shit once you actually get it running. Otherwise,
so mean,
I'm just going to use
you mean
something
in
else.
Order to make a good piece of technology, you need to have good hardware and good software and a good software experience
and good user experience. Yeah.
Why?
Who knew?
Who knew? Yeah, exactly. Why don't
the
companies...
scales have been lifted from my eyes. So here's this one is also... I find this interesting in the same way that I find chess interesting. Like, I'm fascinated by it, but I don't really understand it. I mean, I can play, but I'm rubbish at it. So audiophiles, for the longest time, people that really want good quality music have resisted digital music.
Yeah, like Dave Snyder, top man here, listens FLAC only. He listened. I mean, he is the kind of guy.
FLAC is a high level audio codec.
Uncompressed.
That, like,
it's not, it's lossless. It's not lossy.
Right.
And he has the right equipment, not only the hardware, but also the software to listen to audio, pure audio files.
So just to explain it to people that are as ignorant of this as I am, when you go to, say, iTunes Plus, or you go to iTunes and buy a song for 99 cents or $1.29, the version that you're getting is encoded at a more highly compressed level than if you buy the song on CD, right?
Yep.
So
it's compressed, period.
You need really good sound system and also really good ears in many cases to appreciate the difference. But there are people that do appreciate the difference and they don't want to buy those.
No.
They consider to be inferior versions. So Apple now, I guess, is responding to these people with a new thing called Mastered for iTunes.
Yeah,
now,
can
you explain this to me?
Sure. So right now on iTunes, previously there have been two tiers of music, right? You have iTunes and iTunes Plus. iTunes is your standard. I'm not sure what the bit rate is.
Everything is iTunes Plus now.
It's all iTunes. So it's all 256K.
They had a system recently where they basically upgraded. Everything now is that higher bit rate. I think that's right.
So, or at least the large, all new music is iTunes Plus. It's 256K. You have the option of doing that. And that's not streaming. That's downloading. It's separate from streaming completely. And, but even at 256kbps bitrate, this is lossy audio. It's compressed.
In comparison, what's a CD? If I listen to music straight off a CD, what's that bit
you're rate? Losing about 80%. It's not about bitrate, because on a CD, it's not compressed, period.
Right.
So it's all about how many bits of data per the sample. So you can compress audio using AAC, which is the codec that Apple uses, iTunes uses.
Right.
But you lose about 70-80% of the original sound file.
Wow, that's a huge amount.
It is a huge amount. And what these algorithms do, what AAC does and what MP3 does, is it tries to figure out the parts of the audio file, the waveforms, that the normal human ear would not normally notice.
Right.
And takes that out. And then if you compress a CD, you have different settings. You have you have the bit rate, you have the frequency or the kilohertz. And that means, like, how many samples. Like, you imagine, like, a waveform that's, you know, this long, like 1 minute long, and how many times per second do you cut that song up, and then based on those samples, how detailed is each sample?
So let me see. So Apple released a white paper on this week, and I got about halfway, where they explained technically why they're doing what they're doing and how they're doing it. And I got about halfway down the first page, and I just started glazing over. But I think the TLDR of all this is – so Apple already has something called Apple Lossless, right, where you can rip music from a CD completely without any
– it's not FLAC.
Compression
it's
at all.
Yep.
But the files are huge because, again, there's no compression going on. Correct me if I'm wrong. Mastered for iTunes is a new way – in which they can still compress the files, but in a way in which there's less degradation.
It's still AAC. You're still losing that 70-80%, but it's a program that they're encouraging engineers to use, audio engineers. So for example, I think the example in the Ars Technica story was the engineer that was recording the latest Rush album.
Okay.
Which,
you know, when I'm listening to Rush, I want the best quality
you
possible.
You have the nicest headphones, like the headphones that we'll use at CES, the one that – with the super audio,
the crazy ones,
crazy ones, right? They want to still compress the audio files, but retain, make it as close to the CD as possible.
Okay,
and that means not just sending the audio CD through the algorithm and you know, uploading whatever comes out, but basically listening to it over and over again. And it's not a real time process. So the audio engineer uses Apple's tools, mixes a certain way the source audio files, compresses it, listens to it again, compares that to what would normally get pushed out to a CD or a super audio CD.
Right.
Makes some adjustments, and then compresses it again.
So they're basically saying to musicians and audio and people that create the music that Apple then sells, they're saying, use this system so that when you bring it to us and we sell it, because let's face it, that's how you sell music these days, is pretty much on iTunes and other places too, but mostly on iTunes. They are the number one music retailer in the world. They're saying, use this system so that when we sell your music, it's in the best quality possible.
It sounds the closest to the CD as possible. The technical quality, the actual bit rate, it's going to be the same as iTunes Plus, but it has been engineered. It has been listened to over and over again to match the original
CD. So is there like a software or is this like just a set of standards like THX?
It is both. It's a set of standards. It's a process. Plus, Apple is providing software for the engineers they're opening up AAC so they can – AAC is a little unpredictable, so it's not like the engineer knows, okay, because I have X number of guitars, X number of vocals, I can compensate for AAC for the compression and it'll sound like the CD. They still have to listen to the album over and over and over again, and then make adjustments so that the resulting
Is this going to see widespread adoption? Are we going to start to see this? And will we notice the difference?
See, I think this is a –
Are they going to be won over by this?
No, they're not.
Because
they're
still, even if there's like 1/10 to 1% of compression.
It's still compressed. It's still not flat.
They're like the princess that can sleep on 10 mattresses and still feel the pee on at the bottom, right? It's there's a little tiny stone or a pebble on it. I can still feel it because my ears are so highly attuned.
Yeah, I think audiophiles are still going to go for FLAC, uncompressed, rips from CDs, or even the Super Audio CDs with their equipment. This is not going to appease like Neil Young, who wanted a whole new set of standards for digital audio.
Right.
And I think it is it's going to look nice in iTunes. Like you're going to be able to go to the section and see, oh man, this Rush album, this Assembrist album, these Beatles, songs were remixed. So I'm getting technically a better experience downloading something from iTunes, which is popular. It's a good it's a value add, but I don't think. I mean, people who stream music aren't going to care because music that's being streamed right now is still typically done. It's such a low bit rate. I mean, people listen on audio and Spotify. They're used to 128K audio. I think,
and sometimes even lower. I mean, I've seen a lot of streaming like 96 and even lower than that.
I think if Apple wants to be forward looking, they need to realize that in the future, bandwidth isn't going to matter, storage isn't going to matter anymore, and just start pushing like Super Audio CDs quality tracks.
It gives me another reason to think like why the iPod Classic and those and really kind of high volume media players can remain viable for people at the high end, because it's not I look at 160 gig iPod and say, well, I don't have enough music to fill that up. But if you're a super audiophile who is bringing your music over in that lossless FLAC format, it's not about needing to fill a million songs, maybe a few thousand, but each song is so much higher in terms of the file volume that
Well, Apple knows their customers, and their customers right now, it would be a complete ecosystem change, because people are downloading stuff on iTunes who might benefit from the master program. They're still going to – most of them are going to be listening to their songs off iPhones, iPods, using the white earbuds, maybe a nice pair of headphones, but the DACs aren't as nice as professional.
Now, you remember when they brought in iTunes Plus and they let people update their legacy music to the higher bitrate format?
iTunes Match.
No, iTunes Plus.
Oh, okay, right, okay.
When iTunes Plus came in, it was a better standard, a better quality of music. They said if you had already bought this music from us for like whatever the additional charge is, it might be like 29 cents a song, you can upgrade to the higher quality version. I'm wondering if that will be something they do when these Mastered for iTunes type songs
start yes, because of iTunes Match.
The other thing I heard this week, it wasn't on the show notes, but I remember reading it, is that Apple apparently is looking at a very big overhaul of the iTunes interface, just the whole system.
About time.
New software, which is it's not their finest hour in terms of software engineering, let's be honest.
No, the biggest change is the iTunes, the logo. People care a lot about that iTunes logo change.
Better change that logo. Yep. And I think the software, it's a resource hog. It's not the most elegant piece of software.
Well, when people are using iTunes for their iPhones and iPads now, and that functionality, that syncing functionality, was kind of bootstrapped onto the existing iTunes, UI. And I think Apple needs to design that differently so it caters to more people who maybe don't use iTunes as their music playback software, but definitely uses it for syncing.
All right. Okay. So not everyone's a music grognard. Let's not belabor it too much. Let's move on. If we were ranking stories this week by what we think are like actually kind of the biggest, most impactful stories, I think this would have been right up there with Vita. Actually, is the news that Microsoft Office is coming to the iPad.
Might be coming to iPad.
Well,
so
it's been spotted, right? We've seen these screenshots. It seems like it's coming.
So the screenshots came from The Daily, and the Daily stands by their story.
Rupert saying, Murdoch's the Daily?
Yeah, the Daily. Yep.
Okay.
And the Daily said they had a meeting where they were demoed by Microsoft employees' office for iPad.
Right.
And Microsoft came out and said no.
Oh, they denied it.
They denied it.
Okay.
Flat out denied it. And then they kind of backpedaled on their denial and said, well, we don't have nothing to announce right now.
Right.
And the speculation is that I think it's a long shot, but the Microsoft might come on stage during the iPad 3 announcement.
Ah, that would be a big deal.
Announce that as iPad 3.
And that would be a great reason for them to be denying it, because obviously Apple want to keep that stuff secret before they announce it.
I think Office for iPad makes a lot of sense.
I think it makes a huge amount of sense, and somebody pointed out, and I think it's a very, very valid point, that the in the same way that when the iPhone really started to take off, it was a number of reasons, but it was when they made it enterprise-friendly, because you know they made it business-friendly, now businesses and IT people could start to actually adopt it and use it in a real way. Office on the iPad, we like Keynote and Pages, but come on, businesses don't use that. They use Office.
Mm-hmm.
And putting Office on the iPad is going to open up the iPad to a whole world of business adoption that previously has been closed off.
And you know what sucks on the iPad?
What?
Google Docs.
Yes.
Google Docs. Terrible. Yeah. And this is the right time, because I don't think the biggest competitor Office right now is Pages. No, it's Google Docs. Mm-hmm. That's what people are switching to.
Right.
I mean, it's why when I upgrade to my next computer, I might consider not installing Office at all if I didn't need Excel.
And Google Docs is terrific on desktop, but not great on mobile platforms.
So a lot of people are saying, no, it doesn't make sense because, you know, Microsoft's all about Windows and putting their software on other platforms. I mean, there is Office on Mac already. You know, why not save Office as an exclusive for Windows 8 tablets, right? As a way to sell Windows 8. Those two departments are very separate. And I think Office makes more money.
I think Microsoft is smart to know that the iPad is a platform with a massive installed base. Yeah. It's only going to continue to grow exponentially, and they can make a lot of money by putting Office on it.
Yeah.
It's that really that simple.
Oh, yeah. Yep. And then we're reaching a time where in the hardware, the tablet hardware, you know, people are actually starting to produce stuff on it as opposed to consume. And we're ready for it.
I think it's terrific. And when I saw the news, honestly, my first thought was like, wait, why isn't that all – really? Why?
Yeah.
It seems like that should already be there. It's such a no-brainer.
Yeah.
So,
of course, they could fuck it up.
Of course they could.
The interface could be terrible.
But it's good news. I think it's good news for both Microsoft and for Apple. I think it's going to be a great boost to both companies, because they're two massive, massive titanic products. One titanic software product, one titanic hardware product. Put them together, everyone's getting fucking rich.
I would love to see Microsoft go on stage during the Apple keynote for the iPad 3 and demo Office for
Why
iPad.
Not? I mean,
that would be such a role reversal. I mean,
didn't Bill Gates show up on a Steve note one time? Or was it the other way around?
No, Bill Gates,
okay,
the big floating head.
Yeah,
Bill
that's
Gates.
Right.
The big
It'd be like that all over again.
It would be like that.
Ballmer.
Except the roles reversed. Back then, it was Apple needing money from Microsoft.
That's
and
right.
Microsoft being an investor.
No, not so much anymore.
And now you can see, because I mean, the rumors were going around that Apple they're putting feelers out for developers for what demos they want to show off during their iPad 3 presentation. And I could see, you know, Microsoft making a pitch to Apple. Hey,
Ballmer
hey guys.
And Cook together on stage.
Wow,
that's what you want to see.
Crazy.
Two companies with, I mean, less so with, he's been around for a while, but two companies with relatively new CEOs.
And you know what? Someone on the chat makes a good point that of late, Microsoft has been pushing a lot of iOS apps, like the Xbox app.
Yeah. I mean, at some point, you've got to divorce yourself from the competitive thing and just say, look, here is a hardware company that has a massive, massive installed base, and we're just cutting off our own nose to spite our face by not putting our stuff on this platform where we could sell a lot of units. You keep glancing down at chat. What's going on?
It's funny because that person was Will. Will made that point.
Oh, I'm not happy.
I'm sorry.
You backdoored a Will comment in there. I'm not thrilled about that. Let's move on.
There's one item on the list that Will added or that we'll get to after this. But I want to talk about OnLive.
Well, I was just about to get to it.
Okay.
I've got this, dude. I know what's up. It's next on the list. So OnLive is still a thing, I guess.
Yes, but not just for games.
OnLive Desktop Plus.
Yes. So OnLive released a demo. You know, OnLive has an iOS app
Just start on live.
Okay, on live is traditionally it's cloud gaming.
Started as gaming.
Yeah, started as cloud gaming as a way for you to play PC games, high end PC games,
right.
on netbooks or even tablets, iOS
right.
devices.
Right.
You know, you install their client software or obviously on PC or Mac.
Because all the computing and the graphics rendering and stuff was done server side and then pushed to the computer, right? So it didn't matter if you didn't have a powerful graphics chip because they were doing it for you.
Yes. And they're selling it as originally a subscription service. So you subscribe to OnLive and then you also buy their games. They got rid of that. Now you can buy games. For example, if you want to play Arkham City,
right.
you know, you pay them the price you would pay for Arkham City, $60
right.
or
right.
whatever price is now.
Right.
And then you would get the right to stream Arkham City from their servers to your client device.
And then they also had a set-top box, right?
They do
need a laptop. They had a little
exactly.
set-top box, which wasn't a didn't have any console guts in it, basically. It was just basically a receiver that could be used as like a little mini console to play games on your TV.
Yep. And so cloud gaming, and surprisingly, a lot of people have adopted it. I mean, the company is not out of business yet. I was a little skeptical. I think we were all kind of skeptical.
Yeah, anytime you see one of these very wacky approaches, you're like, really? Yeah. But they're still
hanging
there.
The latency wasn't a problem. The image compression, video compression wasn't a problem.
Right.
So they're taking this out of gaming now and now in the software, which I would have thought their next play would have been video rentals or, you know, streaming movies or something, because that just makes sense for hotels and stuff.
So what I'm seeing here is Adobe Reader.
So yeah,
Explorer.
Desktop.
What the hell?
So a couple months ago, they released a demo app. Maybe it was like 1 or 2 months ago, where on their iPad, you can basically get a simulated Windows desktop and run Microsoft Word.
Okay.
On your iPad. Today, they're launching a service called OnLive Desktop Plus. It's a subscription service. You pay $5 a month.
Okay.
But basically, you get access from your iPad to a virtual Windows desktop. You get Adobe Reader, you get Office, you get Internet Explorer, and from their servers, you get a 1 gigabit per second internet connection.
Okay.
So what that means is it's a virtual desktop. So if I'm on the iPad, I basically see Windows 7 on my desktop using the Windows 7 Touch plugins.
Right.
I get to open Internet Explorer. I get to browse the web, run Flash media, you know, run Flash videos.
Who needs Windows 8?
But of course, it's Windows 7's touch interface.
Right.
Which is not ideal.
Okay.
The people who've used this say it's amazing. It works really well.
Uh-huh.
On the tablet, like having Windows 7 on a tablet actually works with their with that keyboard system, with that browser. This is going to eventually turn into a bigger service where you can pay $10 a month. I think it's going to be called OnLive Desktop Pro, where you can it will be a full virtual desktop system. You can install any program you want on that version of Windows and then run it off a tablet.
I mean, the fact that they're diversifying and expanding like this seems to tell me that they're doing okay. Yeah. I mean, I don't know what the prognosis or what the state of play with online. I mean, are they making money? I don't hear a lot about them.
Yeah, I think the fact that they got rid of their subscription service was telling that people didn't want to pay just for the right to buy games.
That you had to get a subscription. It's like basically having to buy a subscription to walk in the door at GameStop
to get a game that
you have to be a paid member of a GameStop in order to walk in their store. No one's gonna talk about that.
Right, exactly. To buy a game that you don't physically own, and that if you stop the subscription, you lose the game.
Yeah. So I pay $10 just to get past the bouncer at GameStop, and then when the guy buys the game, he says to me, "Oh, by the way, I can come to your house and take this back anytime I want." But that's what OnLive was trying to pull.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that didn't fly.
I think it's a little more successful now because they can do time-based demos, and people are really using it to try out games.
Right.
I think people aren't really using it for like the arena mode where you can spectate other people's games.
Right.
And their technology really is in video compression.
I'd be interested to know what their numbers are in terms of adoption.
Yeah, they'll never say.
Until they have great numbers to report, which I doubt they have right now. Google Goggles.
Oh, one story. Okay, I do want to interrupt. So this story isn't on your list.
Okay.
Tesla is something that you're interested in.
Oh, okay. So Tesla was...
Yes.
We've been talking about Tesla lately. We love Tesla make very sexy cars, very high tech, all electric.
Yep.
But there is a catch.
Well, there is a catch with one of their models and for a limited number of users. The Tesla Roadster, which is their first car that they released. And not the Model S, which is coming out this year.
Oh, so this doesn't apply to something that we might buy.
And not the Model X even, which is
the crossover SUV, which looks very sexy.
With the Falcon Wing doors.
Oh.
Double hinge, so it actually can open in narrow spaces.
Very sexy.
Yeah. The Roadster, which was the first-gen car, I think it was $100,000. If your battery went all the way dead.
You can brick your car.
You could brick the battery in your car, and right. it would cost $40,000 to replace the battery.
But this isn't the case with models that they're making now. This is a legacy problem. Yeah. Okay, so that's not that big a deal.
It's not big of a deal. People, I mean, the fact that the headline, you can brick a car, it's
cool.
It's very sexy. Oh my God, the car is brick. Just like you got blue screen in your car.
Yeah, I mean, you're basically totaling the car.
Yeah, and Tesla came out to say that, you know, we're aware of this, and they basically have a lot of countermeasures. They give you tons of indications, warnings.
Right.
They even
you'd
go
have
so
to be
far
pretty negligent to do this.
Yes. They even go so far as to call you if your battery is running low to remind you to charge your car.
Right. This is a scare story.
If you are running, if you've paid $100,000 for a car,
yeah,
and you can't charge it,
if you can't take good care of it,
if you
then
can't
that's
take
on
care
you,
of it,
my friend.
That is your problem.
That is on you.
Yes.
I drove by the Tesla showroom in Los Angeles earlier this week, and I was in traffic, and I was on my way to a meeting. So, if I had more time, I would have wandered in and browsed. But I did check in on Path just to give the illusion.
Oh, that's right. I saw it too, and I was like,
I just wanted to.
I just wanted to
pull your chain a little bit and make you think that I was maybe taking a test drive.
Oh my goodness.
But in fact, I was just sitting in traffic outside the Tesla store, and I checked in just to make it look like I was there.
I've seen people in the Bay Area wear Tesla gear, like Tesla hoodies or track jackets and stuff. I don't know if they're employees of
Tesla. You remember Joey did that? Joey Tribbiani on Friends.
Oh, okay.
He was watching some guy's Porsche.
Yeah.
And so he went out and bought like a bunch of Porsche bullshit to make it look like he owned the car.
Oh, that's so
Those
funny.
Those people are such posers.
That's really funny because the Joey in our office wears a lot of Porsche gear.
Oh.
To my knowledge, doesn't own a Porsche.
Life imitates art.
It's because, and our Joey, we always said, is like the Joey from Friends. He gets whatever he wants, right? It's because I think his wife works for Porsche.
Oh, well,
and
that's
so
fair enough.
He comes in with the $500 Porsche sunglasses.
And if you have a Porsche key ring on your keys and you don't drive a Porsche, you're a dickhead.
Yeah.
And
aspirational
you're probably a dickhead
key
if you drive a Porsche as well, but whatever. I don't love the Tesla X. It looks kind of like every other crossover SUV, don't you think? I wasn't blown away by the design.
Those Gullwing doors look awesome.
I need to... Gullwing.
Gullwing, but they call it Falcon Wing doors.
Right.
The Gullwing doors,
I need to see that happen before
the double hinge
excited.
Of it looks
Yeah,
really
I haven't
cool.
seen... I need to watch a video or something.
The fact that it's the same price...
just didn't do it for me.
It's the same price as the Model S.
Yeah.
I think...
I might be taking... I did get a tip that
the battery problem, the bricking problem will apply to other cars. Do you apply?
Okay.
It's part of the technology.
But again, you'd have to be really chronically negligent for this to happen.
And it's something that Tesla
monitors.
It's like
saying if you smash your iPad with a hammer, you could fuck it up. Well, yeah, I'm not going to do that.
Right. Well, if I paid $100,000 for an iPad and...
I'm definitely not taking a hammer anywhere near it.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, good to know. Google Goggles.
Kind of the other weird big story this week. And it's all rumors. So
explain it to me because I missed this story this week.
It's been well known that Google works on a lot of projects, a lot of secret projects. They have buildings on their campus where they have research teams developing
self-driving
prototypes.
Self-driving cars.
Exactly.
Crazy
yeah.
Shit.
Right. The current CEO of Google, Sergey Brin, is apparently very invested in this particular project. These are all based on secondhand accounts and. Undisclosed sources. Google is working apparently on augmented reality goggles.
Like literally glasses that you
glasses.
Wear on your face. Okay.
And the current current rumor is that it's actually a monocle. It's for one eye. It's not transparent.
On. Oh, like the guy in The Last Starfighter that has the...
Flip down. Yep.
Oh, so sweet. I don't even care what it does. I just want that. It could just
do
nothing.
You say you want that. And what it'll apparently do is there'll be cameras involved. It'll monitor your environment and it'll overlay information.
Okay.
Based on, it'll let you not only, check your Twitter feeds, but it'll have real-time augmented reality information.
All right. I mean, I'm on board so far. This sounds very sci-fi. I like it.
It does sound very sci-fi.
I got like Terminator vision, basically.
Right. It sounds like something that we'd see, in one of those Discovery Channel shows, right? Or a History Channel show, the technology from the future, right? Maybe something that the military uses first and maybe eventually comes down to consumers. But what they're saying now is
But what
that
it could mean is, for example, like billboard, it could be like They Live, right?
Yes.
So like billboards in the future all look blank.
Mm-hmm.
But when I put them on, it's all like ads in a video game.
Yes.
You see,
and based on your Google search
right,
history,
we're both looking exactly, which they of course know all about. We're looking at the same ad,
And you're like, oh, baby gear.
I've got an ad for fucking Pampers.
And I got an ad for local singles.
Yes. Right. Well, that, okay. I mean, I'm all right. I'm okay with it.
They say it'll be a real product this year. Not wow. Google. The sources say real product this year in consumers' hands, similarly priced to smartphones. It's $250 to $600. Which I think is expensive.
Now, for this to work, they need to be able to build it into, like, I need to just wear glasses and you not know that they're magic glasses. Because otherwise I'm going to feel like a dick walking around.
Yeah, I think they're going to be very conspicuous.
Oh, really?
I don't think there's any way they can develop.
Even the technology is not there yet for them to be super small.
They're not going
to
be nano cameras.
They're not contact lenses or anything yet.
Not at all. Okay. I think the early adopters are going to be the guys who want to Borgify themselves.
I mean, do you remember those really bad Oakley glasses that had the MP3 player? Is it going to look like that, or is it going to be even worse?
I would imagine worse. If there's a display in there. Right. So at CES, we saw something else similar. I don't know if you saw the video at the Motorola booth.
Right.
We saw Universal Soldier attachment, right?
You
put on like a headset, and there was like a monocle, and they have these actually in snowboarding goggles now. Like they have little display systems that they can attach to ski goggles,
right?
And you could see terrain, climate and stuff, or track GPS. It looked silly.
I mean, on the one hand, I'm just assuming that we can get to a point where the glasses would just look like these ones that I've got on my face, just regular. So I'm not worried about the Universal Soldier factor. But on the one hand, it sounds tremendous. Like, this really does sound like science fiction. It's very exciting.
It's exciting that for someone else to buy and for me to try out for 15 minutes, but not for me to spend $600 on it.
You can remember, what was the name of the app that we were flipping for a couple of years ago that would translate things by looking at it?
Oh, yeah. Make Me Spanish app.
Yeah. So, again, we talked about this idea that like you could walk around Europe and be able to read all the signs because the glasses would translate them in real time for you.
And use augmented reality and put them in line so it would just look like it was part of the sign.
Like you're looking at a sign written in English. It's not overlaying a translation. Yes.
That is magic.
Right, so that, I can't remember what that was called, but remember, we were blown away
by Word Lens.
Word Lens, fantastic app. So Word Lens in your glasses, so now we're getting there. Mm-hmm. So all that, you can see all the great, like any technology, you can see all the great reasons, and I can see all the evil that could be done as
well.
Like, I could be walking down the street, like, I'm no longer looking at the world the way it exists, but I'm looking at the world the way various corporations want me to see it. Like, they could blank out stores that they don't want me going to.
Oh yeah,
they
recognize like every Starbucks time. Logo. I mean, anything that's Helvetica, it's easier to parse, right? So Starbucks could pay no more Pete's.
I don't even know where to start here. I mean,
this is evil.
This could
CEO
go either way. Mm-hmm. And I think this technology will exist. It has to exist. It does seem still a bit pie in the sky right now, but I'd be interested to see it. I think in 10 years we'll all have them. And there'll be so many great things that you'll do that will put them on.
Yeah.
And then we'll be right back where we are now. Oh, so Norm, apparently the latest story is that your Google goggles are now blocking out Starbucks, or Starbucks is blocking out independent coffee shops.
Right. Amazon's paying, so you can't see local bookstores.
They basically become kind of corporate blinkers. You don't want to look at.
Imagine Amazon, right? You walk into a small bookstore, and instead of books, you see prices, the price discount that you'd see on Amazon. Yeah. Big red 50% off everywhere.
But and the thing is, you don't even see the books that they don't want you reading.
Oh, that's a little scary.
Yeah, this is like, oh well.
And at the end of the movie, everyone takes off the Google goggles and rubs their eyes and sees the world for what it really
steps
is.
Steps out into the real world. Yeah. Oh my God, the sky is blue. It's not just one big ad for AshleyMadison.com or some bullshit. Okay. We talked about Vita.
Yes.
On the Google subject, Microsoft, I guess, has got kind of a skunkworks marketing division.
They've always kind of had that.
And they do this crazy shit sometimes.
Yeah, they do. Viral videos.
And this went a little bit viral this week. Microsoft came out with a long form, it was like 3 or 4 minutes, a commercial, a viral video called Googlighting, in which it was quite clever in its own way. They basically present, it was kind of like a comedy sketch where a guy who represents Google Apps, Google Docs, comes in for a job, basically a job interview at like an IT department. And basically I'm Google Apps and I'm saying to you, the IT professional, you should be switching over from Microsoft and putting all your stuff on Google Apps because it's great and here are the reasons why. But then the job interviewer starts picking apart all the reasons why Google Apps is not actually that great for IT professionals and for corporate use. It's like, well, so you change the app all the time, right? It's still in beta. You're asking us to beta test your product. And you could just pull it, like you pull Buzz and Wave and all these other things. Like, we don't know where we stand with you. The argument being, basically, if you're with Microsoft Office, that is a bedrock product. You know it can be relied upon. The tech support is there. Google offers all this kind of cool cloud stuff, but you have no idea if it's going to be here tomorrow or like your work is in kind of, it's a very risky proposition. And it was a funny ad, but it was, A, it was kind of weird to see, kind of like, it's like we see this in politics, but not usually,
tech ad.
Like negative ads, right?
Yeah.
Usually,
mudslinging.
I think there's rules against it, because when you see corporations don't usually go on TV saying, this product is shit, but our product is great. They usually just talk about the strengths of their product.
Well, it's not like it's a TV commercial. It was supposedly it's an internal video.
Just online, and so they can get around a lot of these rules.
Yeah.
But like what we see in politics now, where it's almost all negative ads, this was kind of a weird example of that, where it basically wasn't even really talking about why Microsoft is good, just talking about why Google is bad.
And really isn't for you and me. It's for the IT professionals. It's actually where most of Office makes its money.
And it was also seemed kind of weird that the whole thing was, I mean, it was all based on moonlighting, which hasn't been a thing since like what the mid-1980s. It just felt really dated in a weird, I mean, maybe that was part of the gag, that it was meant to feel kind of retro, but I mean, what did you make of it?
I didn't actually watch it, so.
Oh, well, you need to do your research.
Well, I was gonna let you talk about this video and I'll talk about the next video.
What's your thing?
The Dell video.
If you Google lighting,
yes,
by the way,
Google lighting says GOOG lighting.
You can
Google
go watch lighting. The video for yourself and draw your own conclusions. Yeah. What have you got? You're going to talk about the Dell
thing? I want to talk about the Dell video.
Okay, so this has been a fun week for these bizarre viral videos. The Google lighting one was definitely one. By the way, Microsoft had another one, which I think was a little bit older. Gmail Man. Did you see this guy?
No.
Gmail Man. Again, they kind of anthropomorphized Gmail. So Gmail is now your mailman. He comes to your office and delivers your mail, but he's opened and read it all. And now
and put in the Safeway ads based on what he...
Well, no, now he's making like awful... He's like, hey, by the way, you should be interested in this product. It's like... they're all bogus product recommendations because he's passed the reading of the email wrongly. And like he says, oh...
Is that ad saying that, you know, the way that Google... The parsing is bad, or the fact they open your mail and read your mail at all?
Both. All of it.
Both. Okay, so Hotmail doesn't do that with Bing.
Right.
Huh.
But I don't know if they do or not, but they're saying that Gmail reads your mail. And again, they're not really reading it.
Right.
But it was a bit scary. Reads it. You know, he's like, he's delivering mail to a little girl, and like, it's her birthday. He's like, oh, you've got a birthday card from Jenny. He's like, how did you know that? I read your mail. And it is a bit sinister. But talk about the Dell thing, because this was nutty.
Yeah, this came out yesterday, and it's since been debunked. It's not a real Dell ad.
Right.
It was very highly produced.
Production value was high enough that it was very convincing.
It was on Vimeo's website with the Dell logo on the landing page, and it was supposedly the first of a series of videos spotlighting like artists and photographers and innovators who use Dell products. And it was totally shot in that way. So
it was actually a parody, I think, of a specific ad that was similar to that. Yeah.
I hadn't seen the original ad that's supposed to be a parody of.
It was like profiling creative professionals that use Dell technology. We see this kind of stuff all the time.
Exactly. So it was interviewing a photographer, and photographer was talking about, you know, not only using his Dell Inspiron, but how he goes about his process, right? He goes to the markets. And
he was a very chin-scratchy kind of, you know, hippie artist, very out there, progressive, alternative, modern art type dude.
Yeah, but this is a well-produced video.
It looked fantastic.
There were Tumblr pages attached to – I mean, he had a website –
The production quality of the video was terrific.
Yes. And it turned out.
So that's what fooled me initially. I was like, this.
Exactly, right?
Nobody puts this much effort into a parody, but apparently they do.
Right. And you know what? If I had just stumbled upon this video and played it, I would not have gone past like 20 seconds into
the
video.
Bottom line, the gag is that the nature of this guy's modern art is that he photographs people farting.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
He uses some kind of technique where when they fart, the gas, the cloud, is visible.
Yes.
The flatus, because that is the medical name.
Okay.
The flatus is visible, and he captures that moment of ejaculation, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
And of course, that's disgusting and weird. But the fact that the video was very well produced, and the fact that I wouldn't bat an eyelid if this were real, because there are people out there on the fringes of art doing crazy shit like this. I bought it.
Yeah, so
and you did too, right?
Like, this can't be real. It's one of those.
Hold on, is it? Your mind is telling you it can't be, but you're like, well, maybe it is because we live in a pretty crazy world.
Oh.
So, did we figure out even what the intention of it was?
I don't know what the intent was. I think it's supposed to be announced today or tomorrow. But the official Dell response was lighthearted, and they didn't take it too seriously.
Okay. All right. Well, good for them. And then finally, Norm, you've put on here, before we'll get to what we've been testing right after this, but this is the last little news story.
Yeah.
So oatmeal.
So this comic, you know, the oatmeal, it's a webcomic.
Some people love it. Some people hate it. I think it hits the spot more often than not.
Right. It hits some beats that we've all talked about. It says what we're all thinking, and sometimes we use old jokes. But the guy came out with a comic this week that got shared around a lot, and it's a topic that we've talked about a lot, piracy.
Yeah.
It was about Game of Thrones, and it was kind of a spin on the old, you know, the image of how long it takes for you to get to the actual video on your DVD, right? You go through the ads first, the preview, the menus.
This was something different.
But this is something different, right? This is how easy it is to get – he just wanted to watch the Game of Thrones.
So the basic story is the guy reads the Game of Thrones books and he's like, oh, this was great. I would like to see the TV version.
Yep.
Goes online
and
basically can't find it anywhere.
Yeah.
Right? It's not on Netflix. The Blu-ray's not available
yet.
Yep. HBO Go can only help him if he's already an HBO subscriber.
But he's not, because that's the whole point.
What he's basically saying is right now there is no legitimate way to get Game of Thrones, and then a devil appears on his shoulder and says, go to a torrent site. And he goes to a torrent site and he downloads a 720p rip, which is great quality, very, very quickly, no hassle.
Yep.
So
the argument is, you know, he was pushed toward piracy because it was way more convenient for him to get the Game of Thrones torrent.
As you know, I'm very anti-piracy.
Absolutely.
But I do try to – I always try to see both sides of the argument, and I do see both sides here. I get the frustration. I had this recently on Hulu. Hulu, you never know where you stand with their content. I wanted to watch – I missed the last episode of 30 Rock. I go to Hulu, which is largely owned by NBC. I'm like, well, it's there, right? It's one of, and 30 Rock is one of their major things. Alec Baldwin does their commercials, and you go there. Oh, due to a rights issue, 30 Rock is not available on Hulu right now. And I'm like, rights issue? Like, who are you arguing with? You own all this content. Are you like the crazy guy walking down the street arguing with himself over whether or not you can stream your own content? It makes no sense to me. But so on one side of it, I get it. I get that the only, and we've said this before, the only way to combat piracy is not with a moral argument, not with a legal argument, not with DRM or enforcement, but to simply make the content available easily for people.
Sure. Legit,
so they don't have to go, they don't need to go pirate.
But the other side of the argument, which is why I wanted to bring up the story, Andy Onako, who's the technology writer for Chicago Sun-Times, wrote a blog post about this and saying, yes, the oatmeal, this comic makes a good point, but it's not like that DVD, the old, you know, DVD image where it's inconvenient for you to get to the DVD menus and stuff like that. Game of Thrones is easily available to get on HBO Go.
Right.
And will be on iTunes.
HBO Go is kind of an outlier because you really do need to sign up for a whole cable subscription to get it. There's no a la carte version of HBO.
But the sense that the feeling that the user is entitled to that content and entitled access to the content just because he's not an HBO Go subscriber, that is –
And this is the other argument, the counter argument, which I also subscribe to. In fact, if I come down on one side of it, I've got to come down on this side. Impatience is no excuse for stealing stuff.
Yes,
the Blu-ray's not available yet. The DVD's not available yet. But you know what? It will be in a few weeks.
Yeah.
So just because it's not out yet and you don't want to wait the extra 3 weeks to purchase it legitimately, that's not an excuse to go steal it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's also – I get the frustration, and companies can be doing a lot more and need to do a lot more to make the content readily available, easily available at a reasonable price. That is the only way you're going to combat piracy. You will not do it with DRM. Yes. You will not do it with enforcement.
So maybe,
you will not do it with moral arguments. Having said that, just because they haven't made it available when you want it doesn't mean you can just go get it any way you want.
Just that sense of – because I can't have it now, you're forcing me to steal
it. It's that goddamn entitlement culture.
Yeah. I mean, seriously, it's a bad example. Game of Thrones is a bad example because it's coming out in 3 weeks. The Blu-ray is – ridiculously cheap on Amazon. It's like $35 for the set.
Right.
And when it does come out, it will be everywhere.
Actually, my movie, The Book of Eli, is not a bad example either, because HBO has an exclusive window on that title for a period of time. It's not available on Netflix streaming. It's not available on iTunes right now because that all gets blacked out for HBO's exclusive window.
Right.
And again, because HBO Go requires a subscription, you can at least go buy the Blu-ray or the DVD, of course, because that's already there.
Yep.
But if you want to watch it digitally right now, until that window closes, there is in fact no way to watch that movie legitimately online. Anyway, companies need to do better, but people also need to not steal shit. I think that's it for news, Norm. Do you want to give us a little musical interlude and we'll talk about what we've been testing?
Yeah.
Norm, what have you been testing?
A bunch of things, actually. So yesterday I got a hands-on demo with the Parrot Air drone 2.0. So do you remember last year we did a video, we got that drone.
Little helicopter.
A quadricopter, so it's four blades.
Okay.
And it was kind of expensive. It was actually very expensive, $300, but it was definitely very interesting. That looked much better than one of those small helicopters you can buy at the mall, the small kiosk.
Oh, yeah, you see those kiosks and they're kind of crappy. Yeah.
And the cool thing was that you could control it with your iPhone or iPad.
Right.
And it had a camera on board so you could.
Oh, so you can see the feed of what it was seeing. That's cool.
So conceptually, really cool.
Fun.
But it was tough to control.
Uh-huh.
And
I mean, all remote-controlled aircraft are tough, right?
Yeah, it's very tough to control. And outdoors, it wasn't very stable in an outdoors environment.
Like a strong gust. And
it couldn't go very high, higher than 6 meters. So they announced the second version at CES, and we actually didn't get a chance to try it at CES. But they came by the office yesterday, and I got to fly the new one around, the 2.0 version. It's going to be the same price, launching in May. But the control is one-to-one. So I was using the iPad, and as I tilted the iPad...
Oh, so it's using the accelerometer.
Perfectly tilted.
Oh, that's fantastic.
As I rotated the iPad, perfectly rotated.
That seems like it would feel very cool, almost like you've got like Jedi force control of it or something.
So I've given Will a lot of crap about the Sphero, which I don't think is good at all, because it's there's a lot of delay, there's no camera on it.
Right.
You know, you kind of have to predict the spin
of
the ball.
Well, a camera on a rolling device would
wouldn't make sense
anyway.
Unless you had a gyro on it.
Right.
They've also upgraded the camera, so it's HD camera on the Parrot.
Okay.
And the video looked really good.
Okay.
It actually broadcast
Wi-Fi. So was the accelerometer
Wi-Fi.
Control not in the first version?
It did have some accelerometer control, but it was very finicky.
Okay.
Like you tilt it a little bit, and it was one of those things where if you turn the drone in a different orientation, how you turn your iPad wouldn't make sense. It's like, because it's facing toward, you've rotated it 15 degrees. Now when you turn it, it's not going the direction you expected to go. It wasn't the one-to-one relationship. They've fixed that now. They've patented a new control system. It's still expensive, still $300. But, you know, if people wanted it last year but didn't buy it for whatever reason, when it comes out this year, it will be something to look at.
All right, let's move on. What's the Bounce lighting kit?
So we put us a story last week about a makeshift, like a DIY Bounce lighting kit. So, you know, I don't... When you take photos, you usually don't want to take flash. If you have a good camera, you don't want to use flash. Flash is the last
resort. My flash
is
always off. Yeah,
because it blows out the skin tones.
Don't get good pictures.
And your eyes look weird. And
when it's a choice between a picture and no picture at all, it's so dark.
Exactly.
That's the only time you ever resort to a flash.
Yep, like you know, with your phone or something. If you're in a bar and the low light sensitivity,
mine
good.
Is always off.
Yeah, and most DSLRs have pop up flashes, but the flashes typically they're still very
well. That
bright.
Mirrorless camera that you and I have that comes with a flash. I just put that in
the
drawer.
It's just in my bag. I never really use it, but you can actually make or buy these bounce flash kits, which are basically mirrors that you put on top of your camera and it locks in. And it bounces a flash up on the ceiling and then back down, so it's a much more even distribution of flash.
Okay.
And I've been kind of skeptical about this because I still like natural lighting. But I bought one for $30. It was a kit that you can buy online, and I'm trying to find the right materials to make my own. But it actually made a big difference.
Oh,
it turned something that was completely useless on a DSLR, like a pop up, like Leah has that Rebel.
Yeah.
The pop up flash, I wouldn't recommend that at all. But using this accessory, it's $30.
And you can put this on any camera?
Any camera with a normal hot shoe on top.
Okay.
Yeah, it makes night pictures much better.
All right.
Night and day difference.
What is the carrot's rabbit?
So this is the other thing we saw at CES. Remember, we were sitting in our the suite doing the podcast, and there was that rabbit with the spinning ears, and the ears are coming off, and you're like, what is that video? It's crazy.
Oh, I was going, that thing is awful. What is that thing?
Yeah, so we got that in, and I've been using it a little bit. It's not very good so far. The setup process has not worked. It's like it's a toy for kids. It's to teach kids programming.
Okay.
But it basically is a little avatar.
Also to give them nightmares, I would think.
Well, it's a cute little rabbit. The ears move, and there's a camera built in, and basically you can it's an ambient – connected ambient device. So it can talk. It will tell you what the weather is. It will give you alerts when you get Twitter messages. But right now, the setup process hasn't really changed from the first generation version, and it's terrible.
Right.
And I'm still trying to get that to work. But that is in the queue.
And finally, the Mass Effect 3 demo is out. The big story, of course, and why there is why the demo is interesting this year is that this is the first year that Mass Effect has had multiplayer, and it's a multiplayer demo.
So I don't know if you've played that at all.
I haven't, because I prefer to remain virginal when it's a game that I'm really highly anticipating, like Mass Effect, because I love the Mass Effect games. Mm-hmm. I don't want to see it, play it, see anything of it until the full game arrives. So I've deliberately stayed away.
Yeah,
Have you played it?
Have played a lot of the multiplayer.
Okay,
I've stayed away from the single player for the exact same reasons. Yeah. Didn't want to spoil any of the game.
Yeah,
but I wanted a refresher. The multiplayer is a good demo. Like, it's a lot of content for multiplayer.
Yeah,
for free on Origin on PC. But also, it's a refresher for the ability. So when I craft my class, when I start Mass Effect 3 up, as opposed to having playing through all of Mass Effect 2 again.
Right. Which I did recently anyway.
Oh, you did anyway. Okay. Yeah. Now I know, like, what the Infiltrator does and what the Vanguard does and what the Assault does.
I always just play a soldier.
Yeah, I do Assault. Yeah.
Kick the door down, ask questions later. Yep. That's my Shepard.
Yep. And do that real well.
I've been skeptical about the idea of multiplayer in Mass Effect, because to me it's a story-driven game. Mm-hmm. That's what I like.
Yeah.
Like, the fact that they were actually offering that action mode where you can take the story component out is complete anathema to me.
Really?
Some players,
I want the other way.
So I want more story. Yeah. Just take more of the gameplay and give me more story. I love the story.
Mm-hmm. I want a button that I can hit in the middle of the story in all the action sequences and then have, like, the Mario style, you know, it'll play all the action stuff for me.
Yeah, I just gotta jump all the way through.
And then jump to the dialogue.
Absolutely.
Stuff.
But some people want the other way, and I guess it's good that BioWare is catering to them, although I think it's madness.
So multiplayer is Horde mode. Four players.
Oh, now I'm interested.
Yes. It's wave-based. Not unlimited waves, at least in the demo. There are 10 waves.
Oh, shit, we're playing that.
Yeah. You play four players.
I love Horde mode.
And you know what's cool about it, at least on the PC, I don't know if you're playing on PC or Xbox.
Xbox.
On the PC, you can jump in. So even if there's a game in session, with three players, you can just jump in and be the
fourth. So we're
going to
have some epic Mass Effect Horde mode like we did with Gears.
Yes.
Fantastic.
With different powers.
I'm sold now, because I didn't want to run around and shoot other players, but I love Horde mode type games. Cooperative. Well, I'm excited about that now. Oh, good. I'm glad I learned something today. And I think that's it. I'm going to have maybe something to talk about next week. I ordered a webcam.
Oh, yeah.
Because I did a little Lego build. Mm-hmm. You know, I built some Lego and I Justin TV'd it and people watched and it was fairly popular. People liked it. So I'm going to do another one. But the video quality wasn't great because I was using my iPhone camera, which is okay, but you really want a dedicated webcam. And so I asked Will for a recommendation. He recommended, in fact, the camera that's right up there.
Yeah, what people are watching us on right now.
The Logitech C615, which I got on Amazon for like $50. It's amazing how cheap these things are these days. Mm-hmm. For a pretty good camera.
So 720p?
720p for streaming, 1080p if you actually just want to flat out record stuff. So I'm going to plug that into my Mac and do some recording maybe as early as this weekend.
You can even run Flash Media Encoder, which we use right now, and go send straight to Justin TV and do all sorts of fun things.
That's amazing. So that's arriving tomorrow. So I may do a little test on that this weekend.
Oh.
If you follow my Twitter at Gary Witter, I'll tweet out when I'm going to go live and you can watch me build some Lego.
What is your next kit? Is that going
to
be a surprise?
I don't know yet. That remains to be seen. It's going to be something bigger from the TIE Fighter was the first one I did.
Mm-hmm.
Thinking about doing something a little bigger, but not. So I want to do something you do in one session. So I can't sit in front of the camera for like 8 hours. If I do the Millennium Falcon, it's going to take me like 8 hours to build. I might do the Y-Wing. I might do one of the architecture houses. I might do the Apple Tree House.
Okay. More traditional Lego.
We went to Toys R Us there to buy one, get 50% off Lego sale.
What was the selection?
Well, A, it didn't apply to Star Wars.
Of course.
Which is fine because all they had was Clone Wars shit anyway. I don't want any of that in my house. They did have a bunch of good city stuff and some creator sets. Just as a general tip, though, don't buy your Lego from Toys R Us because they mark everything up ridiculously. In fact, even with the 50% off sale, I only barely saved money over what I would have got buying it on Amazon. So whatever. So that's it for what we've been testing. We're not doing questions this week.
Yes.
Because Will is really the arbiter of those, and he's not here.
But
so
I still want to encourage people to send their questions in. The email is podcast@tesla.com. Of course, try to keep your questions under a minute, around a minute. Use Levelator. Listen to your question.
Just listen
first.
To the question and make sure that it's not shitty before you send it. That's all you got to do.
I mean, you don't need to read from a script.
Because you're wasting your own time. If we hear it and it's shitty, it's not getting played. Mm-hmm. Could be a good question.
Yeah. And please include some bit of hometown trivia.
Or a would you rather.
Or a would you rather. That's a big thing I miss. And don't send WMA audio files.
No, we don't like those.
Yeah. So.
All right. Well, that's it. So that's the end of the podcast proper. We do of course, have fake outtakes coming up. But thanks for listening, everyone who made it this far in this epic, historic, will-less podcast.
I
think we've done okay.
Great job.
I think we've survived.
Yeah.
Jeff was a terrific guest. I learned a lot about the Vita.
Mm-hmm.
And we have, it hasn't turned into Lord of the Flies or anything. We're not eating each other or anything. Who needs this guy?
eye contact. It's the only reason. We need someone else to look at.
And I've even become more comfortable with that as time has gone on. So again, thanks for listening. Quick musical break, and we'll be back with fake outtakes.
Hi there, I didn't see you.
That's it.
If you think I'm stupid enough to do that, then you are absolutely correct.
It's a good one. Who's responsible for that?
That was KJN.
Ah, good job, KJN. I like that.
And we have a thread on Tesla.com where you can get not only the original audio file, but also post on SoundCloud the outro.
You can become a part of the Tesla podcast.
It's all community driven.
That's amazing. I love it. So I guess I could have done this in what we're testing, but I feel like it's better for fake outtakes because it's, you know, the kind of nonsense we talk about. So I made a tremendous discovery this week that you had already discovered, and I'm a bit annoyed that you didn't turn me on to this.
Wait,
I feel like you should have known.
I know what you're going to talk about, and I did because I talked about it during Bricked.
Did you?
Yes.
I have to be honest. Sometimes my attention in Bricked wanders. Sometimes I've just got it on in the background and I'm not like locked into it.
It was like two episodes where I talked about watching Batman.
Bricked, by the way, we can talk about that before we're done. Okay. Bricked has been terrific.
And I have some worrisome news about Bricked.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. So don't let me forget about that. But basically, so I was in LA this week for business and I stayed overnight in a hotel and I'm watching LA, you know, dialing through the LA TV station, see what's on.
Yeah.
And I discovered this channel called The Hub.
The Hub!
And it's the best channel ever. It was like, how can this possibly keep getting better? So I started off by watching Doogie Howser, M.D., which I haven't seen since the early 90s. It's fantastic to see that again. Mm-hmm. Then original 1960s Adam West Batman, which is also incredible.
Yep.
Then G.I. Joe. No, wait.
Transformers Prime first.
Transformers Generation 1.
Okay.
Then original G.I. Joe, A Real American Hero. And then Transformers Prime. It's a fantastic lineup of TV. And this is before I even start talking about My Little Pony, which obviously a lot of people are into that as well. And they've got a bunch of other great stuff.
Gem.
Laverne and Shirley.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
All kinds of fantastic. Yeah.
This is
days.
You don't need to do Gary TV anymore because this is...
It's a fantastic kind of mix-up of like Nickelodeon and Nick at Night all in one channel. And I'm watching it going, oh my... And I tweeted something about like, oh, this LA is... Why I like coming to LA because they have this great TV channel that I don't get in San Francisco. And I got tweets from back people saying, you do get that in San Francisco. So I come home. Somehow on a dial I'd missed it, and now this is what I do now on every night of the week. I just watch The Hub because it is fantastic.
Channel 813 on Comcast in the Bay Area.
813 in HD, 121 if you don't have HD.
The reason most people miss it is because it doesn't fit within that 700-800 channel. Like you assume everything.
I usually get to like HBO 801. There's nothing on further down. It's usually going to get to the music channels, but no, there is this vast untapped resource
it's
of awesomeness.
It's not just like a. It's someone's actually programming it. It's a real channel.
Oh, for sure.
Like they have real commercials. I mean, the content's all, you know, old.
And they have some of their original content, Aquabats, whatever that is. That's a thing, I guess.
Yeah. And they have interstitials and everything, you know, promoting it.
Very high quality production values.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's obviously not just for Comcast or not just in the Bay Area or California. I'm sure if you have cable, go look for The Hub because it's a terrific channel. And it has a great – you get to relive your childhood basically.
Yes. And you know what I like because I use it primarily for Batman. They don't show two episodes back to back, so you really got to watch it every day.
Oh, no, when they say tune in next week and tune in tomorrow,
yes.
Every episode – it basically ends on a cliffhanger.
Yes.
You got to tune in.
Yeah.
Like when I left it last night, Batman and Robin were suspended over a vat of sulfuric
acid. That's right. When Penguin was going to walk and try to save him, but he was lying.
I need to tune in tonight to see if they live or die.
That show
is so good. I feel like it could go either way. Great show. And then the other thing I discovered, which I hadn't watched before because I didn't think it'd be for me, but it's great, is the new Transformers cartoon, Transformers Prime. Huh. I think it's actually pretty damn good.
So I actually haven't watched Transformers Prime. It's CG.
It's all CG, and you know I get the skepticism because a lot of those kids' TV animation these days that's under CG is terrible. But Transformers Prime is actually really high quality.
And it's
very impressive. It's
the telling of the original Transformers story, or is it new stories?
I haven't watched enough of it yet to understand the mythology, but it's definitely pseudo aligned with the Michael Bay movies.
Okay,
but it's not. There's no, you know, it's more sci-fi than that. It's kind of like some of Transformers Generation 1 mythology and some of the Michael Bay, and the designs are similar. You can see that the Michael Bay movie designs are there, but they're simplified. They're not like a million confusing moving parts like they are in the CG movies. They look really good.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just really enjoying it. The Hub is a great station. I'm loving every minute of it. So thank you for not turning me onto it and letting me discover it on my own, because I feel like I now get to own that discovery.
Is the Green Hornet on there?
I haven't seen that yet. I haven't watched. I haven't looked at all. I've just been looking at that like 8, 7 o'clock to like 10 o'clock block.
Yes.
And they have lots of new and old flavors of everything. So they also have the new G.I. Joes that, you know, Warren Ellis wrote a bunch of animated G.I. Joes. They're showing those as well. I like the original G.I. Joes. Although they're very hard to take seriously because I didn't grow up with them, and all I ever really knew them for were those
figures.
Well, the fake PSAs that they did.
Oh, yes.
Remember when they redubbed the PSAs and made them hilarious?
Well, on the internet, yes. Not the broadcast. Right. But that's how I learned how to stop a nosebleed. Was the PSA.
Okay.
Yeah. And also how to tread water.
And I never saw the original Generation 1 Transformers either because I didn't grow up with that as a kid. And I got to say,
the
transformations are fucking bullshit.
Well, the storylines,
they don't even try to show how like parts become other parts. Like, they basically just disassemble and reassemble in a completely different form. Like, the head just comes off and like floats onto the top. It's nonsense.
I don't think they really cared about that show. They just wanted to sell toys.
Yeah, they were just selling toys back then. Yeah. Prime is a much better example of what I think kids. If you're going to have like a Transformers show today, Transformers Prime is what it should look.
Well,
like.
I was always wondering, what do kids watch these days? Like, even when I was growing up in the 80s and 90s, we had Disney Afternoon. There were DuckTales, you know, Tailspin, stuff like that. What do kids watch? What animated shows do they watch?
Well, I got into a fairly heated argument with you and Alex Navarro last night about the real Ghostbusters because I thought that was terrible.
Well, it's what I grew up with. I think. With Alex and me, we watched that before we watched the movies, probably first.
I'm glad that we were finally able to find some common ground on Danger Mouse, which everyone agrees is fantastic.
Of course.
But you know, we've talked a lot about Gary TV and what my child is going to grow up watching. The Hub is practically almost always, may not even need to do it.
Well, you can get rid of the crap and then, you know, slot in.
I'll definitely
the British
be sourcing
shows.
A lot of content from The Hub, for sure.
Yeah. DVR that. I'll be on a time delay. And that way your kid won't feel like no one else is watching. Same stuff. There will be still some sippy cup cooler talk.
Right. So what's this Bricks news you've got?
Well, we haven't shot any this week.
Because Will's been sick. Don't you think it's funny that he suddenly came down with this mysterious illness right as fortune started to turn and you suddenly took the lead and now it looks like you may win this thing? How convenient.
Very, very convenient. So I've been itching to build all week and Will's been too sick to come to the office and think, well, he's not here to get us all sick.
So you didn't shoot at all this week?
No.
Oh, wow.
It's Thursday.
Well, it's been a short week anyway because Monday was a holiday,
That's right.
So us Bricks addicts that want our fix, what are we going to do?
Well, we're good through tomorrow.
Okay.
And tomorrow is it's an interesting challenge episode. We had three challenges this week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday.
Wait, so how many episodes do you have like in the hopper right now?
Just through tomorrow.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
But don't you usually shoot like a week ahead?
Right, but Will's been gone this entire week.
Oh, shit.
So we were talking, and Will isn't here to chime in, but he might need a surrogate, a ringer, to come and build for him. I don't know how he would feel about that. I don't know how the viewers would feel about that.
I don't know. That's a good question. On the one hand, you know, in sports, substitutions are perfectly legal.
Right. Yep.
The question, I mean, who would it be? And how do you feel about it? You're the competitor. So.
I'm in a difficult place right now. I don't want to spoil tomorrow's episode, but
I know it's a good one. It's a good one.
Oh yeah,
because there's definitely, you know, all the challenges and twists and turns. This is perhaps the greatest one yet.
Debatable, but yes, I thought the C-3PO challenge was pretty good.
That was good. I liked the night vision challenge.
You know, a lot of people didn't like that one.
Well,
they
didn't like nobody to see anything.
Couldn't see anything, but
it was good. It was very
challenge. It was good. Yes, it's changing things up. We're nearing completion. I mean,
yes. And so the narrative, of course, has been that Will, for the longest time, has been acting very braggy and very pleased with himself because it seemed like he had been enjoying a comfortable lead for a long time.
Yes.
And then I don't know what it was. What was the tipping point? Because now you seem to be in the lead.
Well, I got through the superstructure.
Okay.
And once I got through the superstructure, the pieces I got were bigger than one-by-one pieces, and they weighed more.
Right.
And once I started building
the difficult part that was slowing you down, you pushed through that, and now you've started speeding up.
Now I'm done with the engines.
Right.
And now I'm on to the final two sections, the final two bags. And it turns out my bags 6 and 7 are much fewer pieces.
Well, I heard this from people that built the Superstar Destroyers, that once you get to the end, like the whole plating, they're all big pieces. Like, that's going to come together
That's where I'm at right now.
But Will really seems like he's stalled out. Like, the last few episodes, I'm not seeing the build really moving. It doesn't look. What's he doing?
I don't know. He's not throwing it. I know that for sure.
But Will's arrogance and his complacency about winning this thing. I said, what are you going to do, Norm, when I'm done? Are you just going to keep going?
I had a minor freak out.
It's all coming home to roost now.
Because I know Will will do anything to win also. And we talked about our Game of Thrones story where Will basically, he trolled everyone by pretending he didn't care and even went so far as to insult everyone in the room on Twitter just so you'd come back at the last move and no one would notice
him. But I think that's valid. That kind of psychological warfare, I think, is perfectly – that's all part of the game.
My fear is that that's happening right now in LEGO.
Do you feel like that he's got like a burst of speed that, that you don't know
maybe.
About or something?
I can't get complacent is the thing.
Well, he has revealed to me a couple of sub-tactics that he intends to deploy against you, which are very
sub-tactics,
which I cannot reveal.
Oh my god!
But he does have a couple of he's been doing things
I don't
know about.
What
he has some aces up his sleeve.
Oh, see, this is exactly what I'm talking about.
And again, I'm very strict, and as you know, I'm not going to let Will do anything that I think would be improper. And as an impartial judge, I don't think he's going beyond the boundaries of a fair play.
I think he's not weighing stuff. He's giving the illusion that he's behind, but really he's
ahead. It's not that. He's doing everything he can to build as well as he can. He's really applying himself.
It's a lot of psychological warfare going on.
All I'm saying is the game doesn't end when you leave that room in his mind.
Oh, I know he reads the instruction manuals.
Oh, no. Keep going.
What? Is he built? Is he like in his mind palace? Is he building Lego?
Let's move on.
Will told me this stuff in confidence,
and I don't want to.
Oh my goodness!
I don't want to give too much away. See, it's all part. I mean, what's your confidence level right now?
Well, right now, technically, I think I'm still 2% ahead.
Okay.
And
again, your home stretch is potentially easier.
Potentially,
than his.
Yeah, yeah.
How many episodes left do you think it's going to take to close this thing out?
I think we're just about at episode 20 right now, I want to say.
Next week, though, there's going to be nothing for Bricked Junkies, right? You're not going to have any.
Well, we're going to hopefully, if Will feels better, or maybe a weekend shoot, we'll that's part of the endurance. We got to be consistent.
I wouldn't want to be in that room with him until, even if he says he feels better. For my own health, I wouldn't want to be in
there. Well, I'll get him a SARSGuard or something.
You got to put him in like a hazmat suit or something.
Yeah, I'm freaking out right now because I don't know what he's doing.
Neither of you wants to lose.
No.
And of course, the winner gets the fabulous prize of assisting me building Tower Bridge.
Is that the prize? That's got to be there.
Yeah, why not? Yeah. I think that's a good prize. Yeah. The biggest set currently that LEGO makes available. Yeah. That's
right. And
that's the bounty.
Whoever has proven himself the better LEGO builder should be the one to assist.
Well, exactly.
You.
Exactly. Right. This is all like a big job in it. This is like The Apprentice.
The Apprentice.
I'm letting you winnow yourselves down until the last.
I'm Bill and he's Kwame from season one.
Oh God! Wow, you got a better memory of the Apprentice than I do.
That's the only season I watch.
Oh, you only watched the first one?
Yeah.
All right. Well, is that it? Do you have anything else you want to talk about? Should I talk about George Takei?
Yeah,
I don't really care too much about that.
Well, what is? I don't know.
So George Takei, of course, we all love him dearly. He's kind of like the male Betty White, right?
And he's going to be on The Apprentice, also.
He is on The Apprentice. This new season has already started. I'm not watching this yet because I've had it with Trump. So George Takei, of course, you know, was Sulu on Star Trek and regular guest on the Howard Stern Show, and he's hilarious. And he's seems like a great, great guy and a tremendous champion for gay rights. And just there's nothing to not love about the guy. Yeah. Or so I thought.
Uh-oh.
George is very active on the internet. And he's on Facebook. And he has a very popular Facebook fan page. And basically what George apparently does, it's either him or a proxy, sits on the internet all day posting things on the internet that he's found hilarious. The problem is they are all tragically old things. Like really old internet jokes. You know how like your grandpa or whatever sends you, you know, they just discover the internet.
Yeah.
And now they're sending you chain letters and email jokes. And oh, you've got to see this. It's hilarious. But it's like something from like the fucking dark ages of the internet that like hasn't been funny or relevant for like a decade. But he's just seeing it now and he's like spamming everyone in his contact book. That's George Takei. And it's not so much his, because I tried to block him, but I can't figure out how to do it because it's a fan page. I can't I can block him. But all of my friends, so many of my friends on Facebook think this stuff is hilarious as well.
Oh, no.
And it's because it's George Takei that's doing it. They're like, oh, look, I'm going to retweet George. So my Facebook, I feel like I'm on Facebook in 1995
or something.
This is
a very Larry David problem you're in.
It is a Larry David problem, but damn it, I'm hosting. So we're going to talk about it. Will would have shut us down by now.
No. I agree. It's a very awkward social situation.
I issued an ultimatum this week to my Facebook followers and said, look, I hate to be a dick about this, but I'm getting sick of it. I'm tired of everyone reading. It's like four or five things from George Takei a day with multiple people resharing
that frequently.
Oh, yeah. Go look at his page. He's like, he posts like 10 or 12 things a day. Ooh. And it's
give me an example of something that's old.
I'm trying to think of... You remember that Carmen Miranda or like that pink Darth Vader that went around Comic-Con a few years ago? Like white and pink Darth Vader? Yeah. That's new, apparently.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I just saw that yesterday. I'm trying to think of another example. Like, I can think of better examples, give you more time, but they're all things I guarantee you, they're all things you've seen before.
It's not like reposting on Reddit where it's something from last week. It's something from... It's like lolcats, like him finally.
It is. It's lolcats. It's fucking hamster dance. It's the oldest shit on the. It's like an internet museum.
Does it feel like he's catching up? Where at some point he will have seen all the old things, or is he moving at a pace?
Yeah, he needs.
Where
to
he's always going to be three years behind.
If he's posting at a rate faster than which his memes are developed, then maybe he'll catch up. But for right now, it's chronically old, and I can't stop it. Because, again, it's not – I don't follow George's page, but other people do. And, again, I think it's because it's a celebrity that's tweeting this stuff. It gets, like, a boost that otherwise it wouldn't get.
Of course, of course.
And so my feed is spammed with this crap. And so I made a post this week saying, look, if you're one of my followers and you share one of George's links, I'm going to unsubscribe from your feed because I got to do something.
Wow.
It's
harsh.
It's time to get radical because I'm sick of this stuff.
Although he seems like the kind of person who, if someone told him that and maybe introduced him to a website where he can get the latest memes,
yes,
then he'd be humble about it.
There needs to be an internet intervention.
Yeah.
And he actually also, again, he posts a lot of stuff to do with, equality, gay marriage, stuff like that, because obviously that's kind of where he's at. And I support all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. And he actually has tweeted, it's not all bad stuff. He's tweeted some stuff that actually is pretty relevant and funny.
Hmm.
But the signal-to-noise ratio... is what it's like. Imagine I subscribe to a newspaper and one day out of every week I get today's paper. Every other day I get delivered the paper from 5 years ago. You would want to unsubscribe.
It's a late
from that
edition
newspaper.
TV
yeah,
show.
Yes. Chronically late edition. And so I've had to start making some moves there.
But you like the paper a lot is the thing. It's I think the same problem I have with Roger Ebert, where I like him, I like his writing,
right?
But I can't stand his movie reviews because he has this bad tendency to spoil plot.
Right.
He's not very aware of what should and shouldn't be spoiled. He'll just write whatever he wants,
right?
And so I can never read his movie reviews, but I'll read his blog.
I would read them after I've seen the movie.
Yeah, exactly.
In fact, I often do that, but a lot of times I don't want to read reviews because these days you don't know. Some people just will recount. Mm-hmm. I read a review. I think it was Entertainment Weekly reviewed the new Denzel movie, Safe House.
Oh, yeah.
And the first three paragraphs were basically just a beat by beat. I didn't need to see the movie. So I get if you don't like it, but like, don't spoil it for me. I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, so that's lazy.
Very annoying. So I think that just about does it. We've been going for 2.5 hours.
Oh my god! How did that happen?
And just the two of us.
I know we're pulling more weight, 33% more weight each.
This is the hardest working podcast in show business. How do you feel we did?
I would rate her. I would give it a solid A.
Oh, you want to do A? Okay, yeah. You want to do that? Okay, I'm going to give myself an A plus.
Okay. Oh, plus.
I'm
going
to give you a B.
What?
No, yeah, B plus.
What?
No, I'm going to give us both an A. We did great.
We averaged out to both being
again. You got to remember, this is maybe the first time ever since I started doing the podcast that it's been just two people in the room, right? I mean, Jeff was
here
for a bit.
We had a podcast where it was virtual, Will, and I hosted, and you were.
But he was still very much.
Yes,
he made his presence known.
Oh, he did, very much so. As much as he could on an 11-inch screen over Skype. With his funny hats and
shit. Well, as always, the audience will be the judge. Get on the forums. Let us know what you thought of this very special podcast. We're keen to hear your thoughts. Will, we hope we'll be back next week, and we wish him well. Hope he feels better soon.
Yeah.
And that is it. Is there usually a way that we close out this thing out, or do we just stop?
No, we talk about how hungry we are, which I am.
I'm pretty hungry too. We should go get some food.
I mean, now that we're not rushing to shoot
and,
Lego.
What's TNT today? Do you know?
I'm not sure exactly.
Oh, I'm going to go find out.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for everyone. We'll be back hopefully at full strength next week.
All right.
See you then.
See you guys.
Bye.